You are all welcomed, the CFO and all other officials of the department. You are all welcome this morning. Honourable members, the minister was supposed to be here with us today, but she apologized due to other official commitments, so she won't be with us this morning. Today we'll be discussing the strategic plan of the department, and I'm not sure whether is it necessary for us to introduce, to have an introduction, because I think we know one another now. Our faces are familiar with the officials, and we are also familiar to them. So I don't see it necessary for us to make the introduction this morning. Without the waste of time, Deputy Minister, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Chairperson, let me reiterate our Minister's apologies she asked me to convey to you. This was a long-standing arrangement, and I'm told that she has discussed it with you and sent a letter through. Perhaps given the length of the inputs that we're going to have today, Chairperson, they're fairly comprehensive, and also in the interest of ensuring that there's maximum time for members to reflect on it and ask questions and deliberate on the matter, I think we proceed immediately to hand over to the DG.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, and the Deputy Minister and the colleagues, I will be presenting the annual performance plan. Chairperson, I wanted to start by saying we are to submit, I would say it's an amended strategic plan, but it's just that as we know that there was a change, and then I had to go and present it to the new minister, and then based on that, this is a strategic plan. But today we'll be discussing now the annual performance plan, which is moving from the strategic plan. Also, Chairperson, I want to preface the presentation by saying as a department we had a retreat whereby the minister, the deputy minister, and the top management of the department sat and looked at what would be the priorities of the department. So minister has looked at what is presented today. Chairperson, the vision and mission of the department is still the same. There has been no amendment. So I won't go through it. It was the same vision and the mission. And Chair, we still responsible to contribute to the three outcomes of government, which is all people in South Africa are and feel safe, a skilled and a capable workforce to support an inclusive growth plan, and an efficient, effective, development-orientated public service, and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. The performance agreement which has been signed by the President and the Minister at that time has not changed, is still the same, but we'll be explaining what we're doing on each of those objectives. Well, Chair, we're to look at that the issue, how are we supporting the priorities of government? We first look at the electoral mandate, which education, as we know, is the apex priority, decent work, health, rural development, and fight against crime. So what is the role of DHA around those electoral mandates? Is the access to rights and services in terms of education? We need to ensure that children have got a birth certificate in order to register, and then for an ID for people now to write their matric, and as well as to enroll into the universities. Building a capable state, so we need to ensure that as a department we also support in terms of government be able to deliver, and then enabling economic growth by allowing foreign direct investment to be able to come through our country to permits, and digital identity systems are essential tools in the fight against crime and corruption. Well, in terms of the state of nation address and the national development plan, SONA for all government to support is to ensure rapid growth, to create a decent work, urban planning linked to rural development and war against corruption, and government must coordinate, integrate and focus. In terms of the national development plan, what we think are relevant to the Department of Home Affairs is to enable skilled migrants to work in South Africa, consider a single visa for SADC visitors, and work permits to foreigners who graduate in South Africa, and DJ can contribute to empowerment, equity, and other redress measures, and engagement with strategic countries. Then based on this high level, then as a department have to come now with our objectives to ensure that we're able for the achievement of these priorities of the country. Well, Chairperson, we certainly agree. What is the vision of the transformed Home Affairs? What do we want to see Home Affairs after the end of this administration? We are saying, Chair, is every visa and permit is issued on the basis of an effective risk analysis and the identity, business and location of foreign nationals in South Africa is known. That's what we want to achieve at the end. Immigration is used to proactively advance national interest, and the entry, stay and exit of legitimate visitors is facilitated rapidly and securely. Ports of entry are secure, efficient and welcoming of legitimate travelers. The status of asylum seekers is securely and efficiently determined, and genuine refugees are assisted in a coordinated way by relevant departments and by national and international organizations. The corporate image and basic office environment is of same high standard everywhere. Home Affairs sets the standard for e-government and the cost-effective and creative use of many alternative channels for service delivery. And all South Africans have a secure identity and are proud of it and sing praises for Home Affairs. I will come back, Chairperson, on these issues when I deal with the objective of how we are saying we'll achieve that. A highly skilled professional, caring staff that is security conscious and 100% committed to serving the people of South Africa. Technology that is used effectively to secure the identity and the status of every citizen and to render them a quality service. Every citizen has a smart card with information that is accurate, reliable, and visibly protected by committed and patriotic officials. All documents have advanced security features. There is a live capture of biometrics and other information, and all documents are captured electronically. There are no duplicates. A robust system of monitoring and evaluation using accurate statistics is used to manage performance and ensure accountability. Home Affairs is at the heart of a secure identity and immigration system that is trusted, supported, and used by all departments and other partners. Well, in terms of this, we came up with the 4-8 transformation strategies. So we need to develop a cadre of disciplined, professional officials that we have done through the establishment of a world-class academy and the culture and practice of constant learning. We want to develop a leadership collective that can drive transformation, take steps to ensure that there is a committed professional leadership at all levels in the department, and build a platform of and systems that are secure and integrated. Our modernization program, driven by the department and based on efficient and secure processes, will make us to achieve that, and implement an operating model that is appropriate and effective. That will mean that we're operating from a local level to a district level, to a provincial, national, that's how we spread as a department, where managers must manage their environment and establish highly effective support services and monitoring systems. And share and establish a strong monitoring and evaluation function to manage performance. We, in the department, we are saying we think that we've got good policies. They might still have some gaps. And we think the resources we have are a little bit adequate. So now, but the issue is always that are we able to monitor and evaluate so that we make sure that we are able to achieve what we've set for ourselves. We'll do that by building and maintaining an accurate data and statistical systems and capacitate our monitoring and evaluation. There's a project which we're working on in the department in this regard. Develop partnerships with communities and within government. Build and work with stakeholder forums. We still believe that for Home Affairs to succeed in delivering its services, we have to work with the communities. Build relationships with key departments like Department of Health, Police, to make sure and education. Work strategically and smartly within state and civil society. Build capacity to research and to analyze and use information effectively at all levels. And contribute significantly to fight against corruption. Integrate affairs across DHA and work closely with security cluster partners. Yesterday we had a privilege of the SABRIC that the banks coming to present to the minister and the deputy minister on how we will be dealing with this issue of duplicate IDs and try and close the loopholes where people are able to use these IDs in order to defraud the economy of the country. Well, Chair, now where we are as Home Affairs, we think that we are, as a service department, we really rely on how we are able to develop this DHA cadre. So we've got a HR strategy which seeks to reposition DHA as a highly effective department and employer of choice. The following top five HR priorities are driven to maximize organizational effectiveness. Firstly, we're looking at people acquisition. We employ the psychometric evaluation in our recruitment methods, but at this point we're starting to do that around our immigration. So we've already implemented that. So like we did at OR Tambo, now we're recruiting again for our ports of entry. So it is part of that. Identify critical areas for capacity building. When we're sitting and looking at the post, we're able to sit in the department and say, what are the critical areas now where we need to improve? In particular, they were looking now in our inspectorate, because that's where we found that we are really lagging behind. And we identify and fill a critical post and strengthen appointment letter in respect of vetting. So we still got a challenge in terms of vetting, that in Home Affairs we're supposed to have each and every employee vetted. But because of the capacity within the SSA, because we don't have the mandate to vet, but what we have decided to do is that in the letter of appointment, it is clearly stated that we will appoint you subject to the security vetting. In the event that you get a negative one, that is a dismissal which has been agreed upfront. And then onboarding program enhanced to orientate newcomers and reorientate existing staff. We are having those programs and profile jobs to inculcate competency-based recruitment for post directors up before you are appointed. You have to go undergo that competence which looks at issues of strategic change management, program project management, and then we test those and inform part of the decision to appoint, so that now we can look at the areas of development even after we have been appointed. Then transformation and change, employment equity targets in relation to gender, race and disability achieved, a youth development program rolled out, and the HK framework implemented. Chair, in the department, we have a youth forum, which is trying to make sure that now we're able to involve the youth in the running of the department, as we are saying that they are the future of tomorrow. And we have come up with the DHA cadre framework to say, if I'm saying I'm a DHA cadre, what are these values and qualities which I need to possess in order for me to be able to be this DHA cadre? Then we're driving organizational effectiveness through streamlining business processes with our IT modernization. Is helping us to really look at how we can change the way we do things, and more special now, even in our area of asylum seeker management, we are implementing certain processes to make sure that can we try and streamline and see where there is a best processes, then we can see how we can replicate in other refugee reception offices. In terms of human resource development, critical skills gap have been identified and training and coaching programs implemented. Leadership forums conducted and leadership capacity assessed. Even on the last Friday, we had one of our leadership forums where we called all deputy directors up, and together we deal with the soft issues as a manager. So I can be able to understand that for me to succeed, I'm dependent on the team. So what is the way and means of managing that team to have a common goal and be able to achieve what we are looking at? And we see this yielding results in the department, as now we feel that we are almost reading from the same page as a department in terms of how we're implementing things. We are looking at a cadet program developed and rolled out. What we are talking about here, Chair, is we want to come up with a program where before people are employed in the department full-time, they must come in first as cadets, and then we train them. Then if they are successful, then it's then that we'll be able now to appoint them full-time in the department. So our learning academy together with HR is something they are working on. Security awareness program developed. Yesterday we had an opportunity again for our counter-corruption presenting a strategy for counter-corruption in the department. And one of the main pillars of that strategy is to create this awareness so that when we say we are zero tolerance of corruption, but people are kept always reminded of that. So we want repeated messages around the issues of security. Performance management, we want the compliance to contracting and review processes, exceptional performance identified and reward and recognition implemented, but based not just a rollout of bonuses, but based on merit and what people have done, and employee health and wellness programs implemented. Chair, we've got programs where we do give people opportunity to be tested for HIV and AIDS, and also other health issues like sugar, diabetes, and all that. Those were saying, if we've got health staff, then that will be able to continue as a department to implement our programs. Well, so in terms of employee relations strategy, zero tolerance to corruption with improved turnarounds to finalize cases with strong focus on corruption and fraud cases and those having financial implications. In the meeting yesterday, Chair was saying now as a department, we are a little bit now slack in terms of communication, but there are a lot of arrests which we are doing in terms of this corruption, but we need now to improve our communication to the public so that they can know that in the Department of Home Affairs, corruption is just not accepted. And we will be now this year coming up even with the placards, which must be clear in terms of that. Even if I'm a foreign national, I'm coming at a port of entry, there must be something that says don't accept the bribe, and also we communicate this issue of corruption. And application for immigration functions to be classified as an essential service. Chair, we started this in the previous years. This matter is still at labor court. way we are saying that our, in particular, in our port of entry, it should be declared as an essential service. Because you can think about that if there can be an issue of a strike, so you can't manage a border which is closed. So it's something which we still want to pursue as a department. Well, Chair, this is a status in terms of the recruitment, but these figures are as at January. But when we come with our annual report, we'll be coming now with the actual figures, how far we've moved. But we said let's present this, which why we are presenting at every Triple M's management meeting, where Minister and the Deputy Minister sit. That this year we end up with the 2,244 positions, and this chair is with people who are also resigning, so that only the post which were identified. So at that point, Chair, we filled 819 positions, and 1,425 were not filled at that point. But we advertise now the 84 positions. They always increase with the people who are resigning within the process. But with that, we already shortlisted 1,416, and then we've interviewed 1,304. So now, Chair, as at end of now where we are, that figure of field positions have increased. We are now above 70%. But when we come at end of March, we'll be coming with the actual figures. So in terms of the equity, in terms of the department, currently we've got 9,216 post field, of which 7,929 are Africans, 534 colored, 73 Indians, 680 whites. And Chair, the issue of disability, as we said, we'll be trying the same record now. For now, we're at 82. Last year, we were at 0.0%, but now we have moved to 0.89%, but we know that we're still far short in terms of the target. But we have put in our processes, as we said, even in the last briefing, that there are positions which we completely earmarked them for disability. So management are forced to appoint for those positions from the disability community. And we have met also with GDSA, who is an NGO who also deals with the issues of people with disability, and as well as with the Ministry of Women and Disability, to get those databases and try and push. It's something which we are working on. But when we come now in terms of management, well, it's another thing which we are conscious about as a department. At below SMS level, males are 3,673 and females are 5,393. So we've got more females and less males at lower levels. But when we come now to SMS, SMS is a director up. We've got 78 directors which are from directors up, which are males, and 72 which are females. So we're short with six. In fact, we're short with three to balance, so that now we can be 75 and 75. Because it's something which we're really conscious about when we deal with appointments. So at the SMS level, we are 52% male and 48% female. So it's something which we really want to push to achieve 50-50, as it is the target of government, what we need to do. So at a total organizational level, we are 40% males and 59% females. But we are happy that at a management level, we are already close the gap now, we are 52-48. Well, in terms of our modernization project, that's what we have agreed now to implement in the department. So we split in terms of what each stakeholder is responsible for. So as a DSA, we are dealing with our integrated revenue engine, and also building the IT physical infrastructure upgrade and change management. and then now with National Population Register Identification System, which will be done by the JUPEDS as we reported, and the Executive Management System, and Health Kijima will provide hardware for that. And then now SARS is busy now with our live capture, EDMS, EQMS, and EEMCS, whilst the call center and visa and permit and frequent traveler are on the second phase. And the GPW are dealing with the procuring of the secure documents and smart cards, and smart card ID printing infrastructure and card design and personalization. I will come back in terms of how far we are with that. Well, the modernization project is aimed in terms of reduction of paper trail. We are looking for a paperless environment, automated and secured business processes within the department, which will result in improved turnaround times and increased accountability to know who was dealing with what, and reduction of identity theft and improved security and increased customer satisfaction. Also, I want to share with the committee in terms of how far we've moved in terms of 2012-13, so we'll be bringing that with our annual report at around about September. But this is on track to achieve the annual target of 594 beds registered within 30 days, which will represent an increase of 6% compared to the proportion of projected beds registered in 2011-12. This has been made possible by us able now at the annual target of 80 additional health facilities connected for online registration of birth and death, and we're likely to achieve this. We will be achieving this target of the hospital. DSA continues to work hard to eradicate late registration of birth. Between October and December 2012, the DSA finalized 27,750 of LRB cases out of the total of 30,900 received. When I deal with the practice for 2013-14, as the issue of late registration of birth, there is a program which we want to engage in it, was really with the aim of eliminating this completely. 787,949 IDs were issued to 16-year-olds and above by the end of third quarter, which represents 79% of the target for the year. Significant progress has been made in terms of developing specification and testing of the smart card, and the unabridged birth certificate was launched on the 4th of March 2013. We no longer now issue an abridged birth certificate. Well, South Africa continues to be a primary destination for international events, with DSA contributing to the successful hosting of AFCON. We had conferences. Even now, next week, the BRICS is coming in as a department. We are responsible to facilitate the movement of the people. In spite of the challenges, officials were able to fascinate large numbers of travelers through ports of entry over the festive season, and we are something which we are still working hard in terms of improving that, in particular in our Great Bridge, Libombo and Maseru Bridge as a land ports. But with our airports, we are able to deal with the volumes. Steps have been taken to strengthen coordination, security and efficiency at Cape Town Harbour, with the design and renovation of a building that will house all departments that function in the maritime environment. This will assist in the developing a management model for all ports of entry. At Chair, we were piloting this year in our Cape Town Harbour and Durban, so we managed to find a building within the harbour. So all the departments, police, home affairs, intelligence, will be SARS, will be housed in one building, as well as health and agriculture. So that's where we started to pilot, and after that we'll be going to Durban and to other ports. The Learning Academy, working with providers, has delivered several certificated courses of high quality to officials. This includes the National Certificate Home Affairs Services, which have been piloted with 272 officials. So recall that in December, last year we moved staff which were at OR Tambo and replaced it with our recruitment from Defence. Now that staff has been taken through this course. They've finished it. Now they've been now deployed. The last group is the one now which is still in our harbors, which now will be moving them because we're appointing people start by 1st of April. And even within the management, we had a relationship with the VET Business School. We've taken MIGI management and as well as SMS members. Some of the SMS members will be graduating here in April because they've finished now their course. Chair, the settlement of invoices within 30 days, as we know, this is a priority of government. We have introduced processes, we are still not yet there, but we have improved from 54% now to 86% in terms of settling the invoices within 30 days. And we've got a tracking system which we have started to work on it at headquarters. We are aiming to roll out that system to our provinces by 1st of April. Well, Chana, I will come now to what are our priorities now for 2013-14, which are grounded out of the three outcomes of the department. Outcome one, secured South African citizenship and identity, and outcome two, immigration managed effectively and securely in the national interest, including economic, social, and cultural development, and outcome three, a service that is efficient, accessible, and corrupt-free. In terms of outcome one, Chair, we still have to ensure that recession at birth is the only entry point for South Africans to the National Population Register, is to issue identity documents to citizens turning 16 years of age and above, to ensure the registration and identification of all South African citizens and foreign nationals to enhance the integrity and security of the identity. Well, in terms of immigration managed effectively and securely, and to ensure a secure, responsive and flexible immigration regime in support of national security, priorities and interests, to implement effective and efficient asylum seeker and refugee management strategies and systems, to facilitate the efficient movement of bona fide travelers, to support national interests and priorities, and to prevent and prohibit the movement of undesirable persons in the interest of national security, and to contribute towards realizing a positive skills migration trend of around 50,000 migrants annually. In terms of outcome three, is to transform the culture of the organization in support of securing identity, citizenship and international migration, to ensure ethical conduct and a zero tolerance approach to corruption, to obtain a clean audit report is still our noble objective, to ensure secure, effective, efficient and accessible services to clients. Now, child, we're coming now to targets now of each of those strategic objectives in terms of ensuring that recession of birth is an entry point. And so we are saying now 642 births must be registered within 30 calendar days of birth. This number is based on the census that we are having plus 1 million children birth in a year. But so we are looking on this matter to link our systems with the Department of Health, because we are not happy just to register 642,000 and then there is a difference of about 300,000. So what we are aiming to do is to link with the Department of Health so we can be sure that in this particular hospital there are 5 births which happened last night, and then from there we're able to register the 3. Where is the 2? Because now in our systems now we're already able to split the registrations per hospital. So if now we've got our systems in hospital A, the beds when they are registered, they give us and say, in this hospital there were 10 children registered and all that. But yet there are still cultural issues which we are in our meeting with the communities. We are stressing the issue that now people must try and get the names of their children. Because people say, no, I come to hospital, but I didn't have a name because the grandpa has to name the child and leave the hospital and not come back. And the issues of not carrying the ID numbers when they come to give the birth is another thing. I want to talk to health whether there can be a way where we can try and say, before you, when you come to hospital, bring your ID number so that now ID books can help us to do that. So we want to continue and at 40,000 at 40 additional health institutions with maternity facilities operational for online birth certificate. When shall we discuss this matter in the department to say why now 40? Shall we say now we do not want now just to register to connect hospitals without the adequate staff. So now that 40 is based on the fact that this is a hospital and also we need to have so many numbers of staff so they are included in our vacant posts. Shall we want to launch eight additional stakeholder forum, but what is important is not just the launch, we want to make sure that they are functional. A strategy and plan implemented nationally and in 9 provinces to reduce the late registration of births. So as I said, Chair, I will come back what we will be doing. Chair, we are really, Minister, I'm sure Minister during her budget speech will come back on this matter to emphasize to the citizens that the issue of late registration of birth is not an open-ended process. It's not a blank check. We've put the processes. People must go and register. The idea is that this is going to be cut off at that point. So that's what we want to communicate to the nation. Well, in terms of IDs, people at 16 years of age, Chair, we've got a number of the smart card, but Minister is going to come back during the budget speech on detail on this matter to say at what date this launch will be done. But what we are saying now in year one, we want to make sure that now people have the smart card is issued. So, but the minister will come into detail on that. But in our strat plan, we're saying for first year, we want to make sure that 100,000 citizens have got the card. Then in the following year, we said 3 million and all that, up to a period of about 5 years. But minister will explain in detail how we're going to go through that process. So the answer for us to achieve that, now that live capture functionality for passport and IDs will be rolled out and installed and functional now to 70 offices. We've got 413 offices which we're operating with. So in year one will be 70 offices, and then in the following, but in the third year, all the offices will be equipped so that now we're able to achieve our target. So the issue of documents which are manual is what we want to really work on it. We will be creating a scanning capability for us to at least change those manual documents into an electronic, and when we do that, we'll be able now to employ young people to come and assist on that process. So it will also result in some job creation within the department. So in terms of the immigration, Minister has agreed that this issue we need to approach it in different papers, not necessarily that we come with a complete so that we can be able to move with it. So now what we're looking at now is that we have to have now these policies developed and approved for management of asylum seekers and refugees, economic migrants within SADC, and attracting and retention of migrants with critical skills. And continue with that, Chair, that we've got an amendment in the Refugee Act. We'll still next year targeting to implement the Status Determination Committee with a minimum of 2 subcommittees established and operational in 3 refugee reception offices. said, to facilitate the efficient movement of bona fide travelers, to support national interests and priorities, and to prevent and prohibit the movement of undesired persons in the interest of national security. There's a decision which has been taken now that Home Affairs must take a lead in the establishment of BMA. So what we are saying now in the 2013-14, an operational model for BMA will be developed for submission to cabinet for approval, and we're also targeting that the bill for the development, for the establishment of BMA will also be submitted to cabinet, and the structures to implement BMA will be established. And again, on this matter, the minister will also, during the budget speech, give a clear process as well around the establishment of the BMA. So we've got an amount which has been allocated to the Department for Infrastructure Development. We are prioritizing 11 ports of entry where we need to improve residential and office accommodation as the standards which we have set up together with the Department of Public Works, and the e-permitting system design completed and approved by DESH as part of our modernization program, and use and technical specifications for trusted traveler program approved by DSA, and the additional 13 ports of entry equipped with the current enhanced movement control system. Now we're at 45, now we're left with the 13, and biometric technology integrated with MCS and piloted at Oral Tambo as the project plan specification. So in terms of the contributing towards realizing positive skills migration trend, around 50,000 migrants annually, we're aiming to have a strategy approved by DESHA to facilitate and support the attraction and retention of foreign migrants with critical skills. Here, Chair, that strategy will look even at the number of years which are provided for people who are coming with the critical skills. And also, because at the moment it is really a shorter period, so we wanted to look at, we can't increase that period for people who are having those skills. And also, currently, when we were adjudicating the application of the people coming with critical skills, we're looking at the main member, not looking at the family. So we want to change that, because a person might come, is an engineer, but the spouse might be a teacher. So we must be able now to look at them as a family, not to say, no, a teacher is not a critical skills, whereas this one is an engineer, but in that event, we want to look at them as a family. We are targeting, Chair, to issue 20,000 permits issued to foreign migrants with skills as per approved skills list. There is a skills list from the Economic Development Department, which together with the Department of Labor. So we are now to attract that. And what we have done in the system, Chair, previously, our system was not splitting skills. If people are coming on a retirement permit or coming as a relative, we're only looking at those ones with the critical skills. Now we've said the system must split as long as I'm coming with the skill, whether from which angle. The other one we wanted to look at now is within the people are coming as asylum seekers as well. That at that process also we need to look what people are having the skills so that we can be able to register those skills. Transform the culture of and support of sexual identity, citizenship and international migration. As we said, now we want now this year that all the 600 newly appointed officials enrolled and trained in National Certificate Home Affairs Services, 100 managers at senior, middle and junior management levels enrolled and trained in outbound management and leadership development programs. We're doing this one with the feds. And ambassador program implemented amongst an additional 200 employees at head office and provinces. What we mean, Chair, by this is that within the department, we're looking at a mentoring process to say if now we've got our own employees who are acting as ambassadors, they go and train and then they make sure that they are working with certain number of people in the organization, because we can only achieve our objectives as long as we are focused and we are working towards a common goal. So that's what we are aiming with this program. Integrated monitoring and evaluation system designed and a phase one implemented, concepted, paper approved, data system designed and structure approved. What we have picked up in the department is that we've got various components which are dealing with this monitoring and evaluation, but in a disintegrated effect. For instance, we've got a call center where people will call and raise what are the issues, why that things are not being serviced, but it is in another branch. And then we've got in another where there's a customer service center, also now operating different. We've got a monitoring and evaluation directorate separate. So what we're aiming to do is to combine all these units to be under one, and they must be in the DG's office. And we want to look at that system to have teeth, because the issue is that we sit during the year and we get that things are going well, but at the end is then that we get the surprise that things have not been achieved. But if we've got a unit like that, should be able to keep us in our toes and be able to put intervention processes earlier than later. Well, as a department, we really are saying we want to really push the frontiers of corruption away from the Department of Home Affairs. So what we are looking at is that we want now reports compiled on security evaluations performed on further four processes signed by myself, in terms of looking whether it's a procurement, asylum seeker process and permit, and we do the evaluation from end to end and be able, based on that, now to implement intervention strategies. This investigation case management system, which provides integrated reports on counter corruption cases, customized and tested, ready for implementation for accessibility to all JCPS stakeholders. So that's why I was even saying, even with the banks yesterday, we agreed that we need now to have a nodal point between the bank and ourselves, that if there's a duplicate ID, once they pick that, they flag it to our system and able to deal with that. But in this one, we really, as a cluster, to work together in these issues of corruption, more especially that people, they were found corrupt in the department, they resign and get appointed in another department. We really want to close those loopholes. Draft policy and legal framework documents submitted for approval by DHA, cluster and cabinet. Anti-corruption awareness campaign conducted with one or more communication and awareness products undertaken in identified office nationwide is what I was talking about. And 85% of misconduct cases finalized within 60 days. In terms of the clean audit, there are two issues there, is to make sure that we've got an unqualified audit report on 2013 financial year. From this year, we'll beat it from that. And 100% valid invoices settled within 30 days of certification. So that's what we really want to achieve in that regard. Well, in terms of accessibility of our services to the clients, we want to refurbish additional 15 offices, and we want vacant funded posts to be filled within a period of 6 months. And then set these targets, that is 95% issued within 54 days, is still based not on our IT modernization, but once we implement the IT modernization, we are aiming that the smart card will take between 3 and 5 days. But we have not yet effected those targets, because one first to implement, then in the following year, then we'll bring the revised targets. So these ones are still talking to the manual processes which we have. Then they continue in terms of our passport, 95% of mission readable passport issued within 24 days. So, and then now we know that in the live capture is already 13 days, so once now we automate, we'll be able now to reduce this time frame. So all these ones are based on the manual processes which we are currently having. Well, so at a high level, we are saying that around immigration, manage immigration, we'll look at the new policy and legislation on immigration, deal with the issue of asylum seeker management, and the creation of the border management agency, and continue with our permit transformation and infrastructure at the ports of entry. With regard to clean and protect the NPR, as we said, that we are looking at eradicating LRB and duplicates essential to clean the NPR and still ensure all citizens of 16 years and older apply for and receive IDs, and DSA and its official to take visible steps to protect NPR. In terms of modernization, the DSA want to implement our modernization program, which includes live capture, smart card, e-document management, and the paperless environment, and the national identification system. And in terms of eradicating poor service delivery, that all necessary controls, processes, and systems are in place, and requires establishing sound leadership and management and organizational discipline at all levels, and build a strong monitoring and evaluation function supported by reliable management information, and achieve the clean audit. We want all necessary controls and process and system around financial management in place, requires establishing sound management and organizational discipline at all levels, and make sure that there are appropriate delegation of powers. Now, Chair, in this regard, that the procurement now has already been delegated to all the provinces that are able to make their payment, and now provincial managers are delegated now to appoint all the staff at a level 7, 8 and below, so that now we make sure that we fast track even the issue of filling of the positions. And now we have delegated now the unabridged birth certificate is issued in the office on the spot, and if there are errors, within 7 days, they will be corrected within that office. All those changes are making sure that the offices are able to deliver the services efficiently and on time. Chairperson, that is my part, and then now the CFO will be coming now to deal with how we have split now the budget to support this priority.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. The presentation is going to outline the projected expenditure for 2012 and the MTF allocation for the 2016 financial year. The presentation will also outline the steps that the department has taken to allocate the budget to make sure that we meet the objectives that we have set on the annual performance plan, specifically to the different programs and sub-programs. In order to achieve that, we had a budget committee meeting that was held on the 6th of February 2013, where business units and provinces submitted the split of their budget. Few proposals were given to the meeting in terms of cost-saving measures and how to fund some certain prioritized objectives per the annual performance plan. This presentation is as a result of that budget committee meeting and the subsequent meeting that was held on the 13th of February 2013. The presentation will also cover on a high level the progress that the department has made in resolving some of the audit issues that have been raised by the Auditor General during the 2011-12 financial year audit report. The next slide shows the budget versus actual for 2013 projected. So the first column shows the budget
And then the next column shows the total expenditure as at 14 March 2013, and projected expenditure, whatever that we are projecting to pay during the few days that is left in March, and our projected total expenditure, which is the fifth column. And then we are looking at what is the percentage of spending that the department will incur for the 2012-13 financial year. So if we look, this is done per economic classification. If we look at compensation of employees, we had a budget of 2.2 billion. To date, we spent 1.9 billion, and we project that we will have to pay salaries of around 177 million. Actually, we've already paid, by the incident, we've paid 162 of that 177 for the people that get paid on the 15th of each month. So we expect to spend around 97.9% of the budget by end of March. If we look at the department, agencies and accounts, these are the entities that report directly to our executive authority, and some transfers to, that's only the departmental agencies. There was a budget of 967. Almost all of it will be allocated, or actually have already been allocated to those entities. If we look at the goods and services, we had a budget of 1.8 billion. To date, we've spent 1.671 billion. We are projecting that we will incur expenditure amounting to 145 million. These are commitments that are sitting in our accounting system, where we've already issued orders. What is left is for invoices to come. They have been coming, and we've been paying those invoices. So we are expecting, or we are projecting, that we will spend 1.8 billion of that 1.8 billion that is allocated, and this will represent 96%. We also have household. This is where people leave the department. We budgeted 11.3 million. We've already spent 11.2 million. We expect to spend around 40,000 or so by end of March, and we will be able to spend 11.2 million of that amount, which is 99.5%. The rest of the stuff are not really material, but if we look specifically on the one that we've highlighted in red, which is the modernization fund, wire money, we've got a revised budget of 214 million. We've spent to date 41.9 million, and we are projecting to spend 18.8 million by end of March. In total, we'll only spend 60.7 million. That leaves us with a difference of 154 million, and we'll only be able to spend 28.3%. This is earmarked funds. So even if we do not spend that 154, we will have to return it to Treasury. We cannot spend it. If we spend it, then it becomes an unauthorized expenditure. Or if we spend it on something that it is not what it was purposed to be, it will then result in unauthorized expenditure. So the Director General has already mentioned that this year we were concentrating on defining the scope, contracting, which we've already finalized the definitive agreement with DGMA. We've identified stakeholders. We started with projects, but then we didn't really, majority of the project will realize in the next financial year. If we then go into the MTEF period, we also then just included 12-13 for comparison purposes. If we just look at the vote, which will be Home Affairs specifically money, in 12-13 we had 4.276 billion that was allocated to us. In 13-14 we've been allocated 4.7 billion, and in 14-15 we've been allocated 5.38 billion, and in 15-16 it's 5 billion. The reason for some of the increases is mainly due to why your money in 13-14 we are allocated 348 million for WIO, and then in 2014-15 we are allocated around 425. That's why our budget is a bit higher. And then in 2015-16 we are then allocated 225 million. What it means is that, and I think this is what the Minister of Finance has mentioned during the budget speech, that Home Affairs has allocated 1 billion for IT modernization. So that amount is then allocated to those different financial layers as 1 billion. Also, what is important is that previously there was money that was allocated to public works for border infrastructure. That money has now been allocated directly into the Home Affairs vault. And that amount is sitting at 260 million, where we've got 130 million in 2013-14, and in 2014-15, we have 160 million. So by the look of things, there haven't been any additional operating funding that has been allocated to the department during the MCAS period. It means that for operating expenditure, we need to look within the baseline allocated and try and allocate the money equitably to all the provinces, to different programs and sub-programs, and also to look at what are the priorities in the strat plan. The rest of the money belongs to our entities, which is FPB, has been allocated for 2013-14, 82.6 million. IEC has been allocated 1.5 billion. GPW has been allocated 134 million. The reason why GPW do not have money allocated for 2014-15 and 15-16 is because they will be able to be sustainable based on their on the profit that they are making from the printing business. And also the reason why IEC has increased in 2013-14, one of the reasons is because of the election that's going to happen next year, and also there was a shift of the budget for the Represented Political Parties Fund, which was shifted from Department of Justice to IEC, or to our department, then to IEC. If we then look at programs, this is what is sitting in the strat plan. We'll then talk how we allocated this money to different programs and the cost-saving measures. Administration has been allocated 1.8 billion. I'm just talking for 2013-14. Citizen Affairs, which then includes the entities, have been allocated four billion. We've got immigration with 647 million. I think majority of time we get asked the question to say why immigration they've got less budget than Citizen Affairs. The reason for this, all the provinces' budget sits under the program two, which is Citizen Affairs, including the immigration activities that are done in the provinces. For 12-13, we thought it's important to mention what was the money that was shifted to IEC for the political parties fund. So there was 109 million that was allocated. This slide just reflects if we compare 2012-13 to 2013-14, and also just to eliminate what is earmarked funds and what are those funds that are not earmarked. So if we look at 13-14, for compensation of employees, based on what were the positions that were funded in the previous financial year, we've got 2.538 billion allocated for compensation of employees. Then if we look at goods and services, the total budget is 2.2 billion. However, out of that 2.2 billion, the funds that are not earmarked, the ones that we can use for our operational expenses, it's 1.2 billion. Out of that, out of the 2.2 billion, we've got 958 million that is earmarked. We've got the border post infrastructure, as I've mentioned before, that there was a transfer of funds from public works to ourselves for the border post infrastructure. In the strike plan, we've included what we're going to be using that money for, but there's lots of planning that still needs to happen in order for us to start spending that money. But we one project that we've already started is the at the Cape Town Harbour, is to have that one center for all the departments or entities that are operating in the harbour here in Cape Town. So that is allocated 15 million. We've been allocated a space, and we need to then revamp that space to make sure that everybody is accommodated. There's enough power, there's enough bandwidth and network infrastructure. If we look at the DHM modernization for 2013-14, we've been allocated 348 million. On Friday, we submitted our business plan to National Treasury in terms of how we're going to spend this money, which projects are we going to be dealing with in the 2013-14 up to actually 2016-17. So we are waiting for Treasury to then appropriate or transfer this money to us so that we can start spending in terms of our plan. There's also money that has been allocated for African Nations Championship, which is happening in September this year. 6 million of that has been allocated. We've got property payments, 473 million that has been allocated for our leases, for payments to DPW, and for also state-owned entities that we are occupying, our rates and taxes and all the utilities that we need to pay for our offices is covered under that amount. We then had amount budgeted for our machinery and equipment for 10.8 million. Provincial and local governments, this is for licenses of vehicles, we've got 1.3 million. Households, people that are going to leave the department or that we expect to leave the department, around 2.7 million. Some of the cost-saving measures that we have introduced as a department in 2012-13 financial year, we had some cost-saving measures that we implemented where we reduced 25% of entertainment budget. We also reduced the catering and venues and facilities by 50%. This year there was really no room to cut, because there was really nothing more that was allocated, but we have agreed as a department or management of the department that we will reduce catering again by 25% for provinces, and for branches we will then reduce catering by 40%. We will reduce venues and facilities by 25%. This was based on the fact that we now have a new building where we've got training rooms, we have conference rooms. If we want to have a meeting where we call all our managers, we can do that also in the office for some of the meetings, not all meetings. That's why then we had that 25% decrease. This then we then got money from different areas based on those cuts, which we'll then be using to fund the shortfall in deportation. Based on the exercise that I'll first talk about compensation of employees, what we have done with it. Every year, we identify positions that we are going to fund. But then in order to get people into the department, you need operating costs. Specifically, I mean, the person will need a computer, the person will need phones, they will need all these things. They will need to travel if their job requires them to travel. So majority of the time you plan for the people to come on board, but then you do not plan for operating expenses. So we went back and we reprioritized the compensation of employees so that we can then have realistic targets that we have for positions that we're going to be filling. And that was also based on the fact that the capacity at our human resources might not be sufficient to fill all the positions that we have identified. So as a result, we've revised our compensation of employees budget, and also we don't want to come here and say we want to do a fireman, we want to do, you know, during the year, instead of budgeting, dealing with the issues during the beginning of the financial year. So the third slide from here will then show us what was the result of that prioritization. So what this slide is showing us for administration, then we've got 356 million for compensation of employees, and we've got a revised goods and services budget where we've effected those cost-saving measures. We've got 724 million, which means that administration as a whole will then get a 1,080 billion budget. The administration, it includes ministry, it includes director general, audit services, intergovernmental relations, and then it also in legal services, policy and strategy. It also includes 6 branches, which will be communication, counter-corruption, finance and SCM, human resources, information services, and learning academy. Also, in the administration budget, you will have the DHA modernization budget, that's 348 million. And also the property payments and security for all DHA buildings is included in this program. If we look at citizen affairs, what is included here is the branch civic services, which is at head office, and all the 9 provinces. So for composition of employees, we've got 1.8 billion that is their salary budget, and then we've got goods and services for 338 million, which then looks at their budget being 2.2 billion. So we then split the budget in terms of the provinces. I think that's clear in terms of how, you know, the amount that is allocated to those provinces. If we then look at immigration affairs, the compensation of employees, we've got 261 million, goods and services 326 million, and then we've got a total budget of 588 million. We've also budgeted for performance management, we've budgeted 12 million. This is for everyone. Then if we look at compensation of employees, the budget is 2.5 billion. The allocation is then 2.4 billion. The 45 million that is there, which is a surplus in compensation of employees because of the reprioritization of positions, will then be used to fund some of the operating costs and also the advanced passenger processing system that we've got a contract that is not fully funded from the amount allocated to Treasury. Initially, we've mentioned this before, that when this system was procured, it was negotiations were happening with Treasury to say it would be a self-funded system, but that funding model was not approved by Treasury. So we need to find ways to fund this system. The system is quite crucial. We need the system. We started negotiation with the company that is offering this system to us, and they promised to get back to us by end of March in terms of, you know, how are they going to make sure that we reduce the costs and also we stick within the budget that we have. This is just to say what is the revised in terms of the program. This is where we are. Then if we look at the progress in addressing audit opinion or audit issues raised in the 11-12 financial year, overall what we said, we said this before to the committee, that we've developed an action plan, and the plan has got steps that we've put in place which has got time frames in terms of what we need to achieve by when. The plan was presented and it was interrogated, and we got feedback from the different governance structures of the department, including the audit committee. We've got a, we report on the progress on a quarterly basis to the audit committee. We also then, on a weekly basis, we monitor the progress against the plan. We've got a structure called Back to Basics, where all the affected or all the branches and provinces attend this meeting to make sure that, you know, all the steps that they've put to say they're gonna be implementing, they are being implemented or not. Internal audit has also been asked to review the progress. They are part of these meetings. We thought it's really important to share with the committee what are we doing with the qualification matter. In addressing the qualification matter, the department is complete with 85% of the recalculation of the balance for the 2011-12. What happens is if your balance, your opening balance is qualified, you need to relook at it, you need to then restate it so that it doesn't affect you going forward. So that's what we've been doing. The DECO account was dating back to 2004-05. August, to be specific, August 2004. So we've re-looked all that work that we were doing from 2004, and we are 85% done. I think this was by end of February. So by now, I think we are almost like 95%. We're just left. We're actually in starting January 2012. We were re-looking that balance, recalculating. We actually got people from KPMG who are helping us to review that work to make sure that we do not have errors that will result in a qualification. Because we felt that the reason why there were those things is because when the junior staff members did the work, there was no review, that adequate review that was done to make sure that we pick up the errors and we correct those errors. Also, just to note, for 2012-13, we've already, which is a positive thing, because previously with the current financial year, we were not collecting the documents at DECO, or the documents were not forthcoming from DECO or vice versa. This year, we've already collected documents from 1st of April 2012 up to January 2013. By yesterday, we were completing collecting the documents for February 2013. It means that the issue of documents is not going to be an issue for the 12-13 financial year. In terms of the relationship between ourselves and DECO, what happened is we had a meeting where the Auditor General called the meeting between ourselves and DECO, DG. In that meeting, there were specific tasks, if I can call it that, where we agreed DECO will do, some of the things will be done by DECO, some of the things will be done by us, and it was agreed that on a weekly basis, the operational task team will meet, and we are meeting on a daily basis, and that's why we can see the progress in terms of collecting the documents and in terms of resolving some of the issues that are there. We still have an issue with the old balances, and we are talking to DECO to say, well, how do we deal with these old balances? If I look at 2004-05, I think there's like 28 million that they still owe us for revenue that they've collected. They haven't given us documents for that revenue. Also, the DG of DECO and the DG of Home Affairs, they are going to meet tomorrow to discuss the progress to date, what has been happening, few challenges that we've been experiencing, and those will then be dealt with in the meeting tomorrow that is going to be happening. We are currently reviewing the MOU. We've visited a few missions to say where the transactions are happening, what are the issues, and how do we deal with the issues at the root rather than dealing with the issue when, rather than dealing with the issue at DECO head office, whereas the transactions happens at the mission. So that MOU will then also be discussed, hopefully in the meeting that will happen tomorrow, and we will have a revised MOU by 1st of April. In terms of performance information, as already mentioned, we based on the audit outcome of 11-12, we then had to review our strategic or our annual performance plan for 12-13. That errata has been done, and it has been amended, and that's the one that the auditors will be using to audit us for performance information for 12-13. Then the auditor general introduced a process where they audit the strat plan for the following financial year in the prior, like in the last quarter of this year. They then looked at our strategic plan, the strategic plan that we are discussing today. The Auditor General has looked at it. They've given us high level findings in terms of whether our targets are smart or not, and where the target was not smart, we then went back and revised those targets. We're just awaiting the formal report from the Auditor General. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, CFO. Honourable members, that was an input by the department with regard to the annual performance plan 2013-14 to 2016. Members, I'm sure, DG, you know the way we do things of noting the questions and responding at the end. Honourable members, may I notice your hands, Honourable Gam, Honourable Marcella, Honourable Peterson Maduna, Honourable De Freitas, Honourable McIntosh. In that order, a number of issues were touched by both DG and CFO. In that order, Honourable Members, Honourable Gam.
Thanks, Jay. Just two things from my side. I am glad to see that you are beefing up the situation at the ports of entry, or also the harbour, and not only the Cape Town harbour, later also some of the other harbours. But the one thing I'm still concerned about is you say absolutely nothing about the unprotected coastline. Do we have a plan in that regard? If so, what exactly is that? Secondly, just two short ones from my side, and I hope the other members will follow that example. You have a target year. This is back to my old hobby horse. You have a target year of 50%, only half of the permanent residence permits should be issued within 8 months. So, number one, how long are the others going to take then? What is the position there? Aren't there specific targets then that if, for example, at least if, let's say, another 30% can be issued within 10 months or whatever the case may be, but it seems that you only have a target with regard to, well, it's a very low target of 50%, given all the problems that we've experienced there. And secondly, you know, what is the plan with the other 50%? Are they just going to wait forever, as is the position at the moment? And the same question with regard to the 85% target. Obviously, that's a much better target, but still, you know, one would like to have an indication when this problem is going to be sorted out completely. And I think by now you know exactly where the problems are in that regard. And can't we get an indication from your side what these problems are, and are you planning to correct it? Thanks.
And goes with that. Mine is a myriad of questions, but I think I'll just limit myself to what is possible. Chair, there has been a concern in the manner in which the department has been acting, in particular in dealing with the arrest and detention of foreigners. There has been some allegations, which obviously we've asked those who've alleged to come forward with facts, but it has been a widespread allegation that more money is spent in trying to arbitrarily arrest and detain those who are of foreign background. Now, whether or not that is true, it is supported by the amount of money and budget that is now geared towards deportation on page 8 of the budget. Whilst I welcome the suggestion of taking all the money away from catering, which sometimes you spend a lot of money in eating food, you can see some of the food that is even left here after we finish our meeting, that sometimes it becomes a wasteful expenditure. But if you look at that, this is the money that is taken out of this and put on deportation, meaning that we need to find a way of balancing against which, instead of spending money on deportation, what is it that we can do to avoid having to spend money in this, but rather to prevent people from coming in illegally? So it's a very rather a scientific way of trying to manage it. That instead of trying to say the food has expired in the fridge because you forgot to switch the fridge on, how do you make sure that you switch it on? The next question, Chair, is that you've got a situation where more unfilled posts have been left for more than 6 months in the previous years, but now we see that the target is to cover the vacant and budgeted post within 6 months. I would like to know, how are you going to achieve this with the high vacancy rate at the department? Chairperson, on page 16 of the strategic plan, here you see that the late registration of birth is one of the main focus, which I fully support. But the only challenge that I have is that if you go to the far-flung areas, you will find that we relied on the service of the mobile offices. And one of the challenges which I have raised many a times, and obviously with the TDG, Mhlekazi Mkhize, is that if you don't have the mobile offices operational and responding to the basic needs in those communities that cannot reach the conventional offices of Home Affairs, then we'll never be able to clean our national population register, and subsequently not being able to read the system of people who maliciously try to end our system. And the only mechanism to try and deal with that, Honorable Chairperson, is to ensure that you curb this high increase of people wanting to enter through the LRB. But this is something that is happening in villages. In KZN, we've seen that. In Eastern Cape, we've seen that. And in other parts of the country. So that is my concern as we plan forward with the next current financial year, the next financial year and the two outer years.
I think the next questions I will raise, if they are not raised by my colleagues, I will give them the bite. Thank you.
Honorable Madonna Peters.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know from the department, how are they going to enable skilled immigrants to work in South Africa? Actually, Chair, why I'm asking this question really is a concern for the safety of my country. We've got millions of foreigners flocking in this country. We've got millions too who are already here illegally. I know you spoke about building and maintaining an accurate data, but really, how are we going to do this? I know you've got plans. You are beefing up everywhere, but really, it's a concern, this one. What do we really need to change? Is it maybe because our policies are not okay? I'm really worried about this issue. Secondly, I'm happy, though, that the issue of disability has been addressed, although the percentage is still very, very low. And then the other one, what's the reason for the 37% increase in office accommodation in the administration program? And what are these decreases in the asylum seeker sub-program when new refugee reception offices needs to be established? I think I'll stop there, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions. Firstly, this presentation's changed. So if we could just have the updated version, because the one that was sent last week, additional stuff has been sent, has been added on into this presentation today. So if we could have the latest, if I could have the latest version electronically. Just a few questions. On your page 4, which I'm hoping is also 4 in the new one, yeah. The figure of 50,000 migrants, skilled migrants, keeps coming up. Can you just tell us what time period? It's just something I meant to ask you for. What time period is this target being aimed for? And then on the next page, I know it doesn't depend only on the Department of Home Affairs, but perhaps you could tell us at what stage, if you can tell us, the issue of a single visa for SADC visitors and how far are negotiations, if at all? Does it rely on is Home Affairs participating in this? Because I'm presuming other departments are involved as well. And then it talks about, in your NDP plan heading, it talks about presence in strategic countries. You could tell us what those countries are and what are the criteria that make them strategic. The academy, as mentioned a few times, can you just also unpack as far as assessments is concerned, that the students that attend this academy, how they assess that you make sure that these students are properly qualified, if you like. And also, are they recognized, these certificates and these qualifications, are they, have they been approved anywhere else and recognized so that it's not just a piece of paper internally in the department, but it actually has some value in addition to that. Sorry, Chair, I'm just going through just some questions that I couldn't find answers for. Sorry, I'm going on to the new one. Page has been changed. I've passed that already. Just a comment. It's great to see the work that the department's doing on cleaning up the finances and getting a clean audit. So congratulations for the effort and the single-mindedness. On your page 25, where you talk about a status determination committee, is it equipped resource-wise, human resource-wise, in every other way to deal with the number of cases that are coming in? Has all that been factored into? Considering the volume, I think that's it on one presentation, and then I just have
one or two in the other on the other presentation, and that is I see that on your page 5 of the second presentation, on the IEC, I understand that it jumps up considerably, 2013-14. The figures jump up considerably because I understand that those are election years. But I see that it stays quite high. Is that because it's a spillover from the election year and then sort of going into the next local government election? So I just want to just clarify there. And then on the printing works, I found it interesting to just say there's nothing being allocated to 2014-15 and the next year because it would be self-sustainable. What is it, what's changed that's making it self-sustainable now from those years? Why weren't they self-sustainable before? It's great news, but it'd just be interesting to find out why they weren't before. What is it that's changed? And perhaps could we not learn from what they're doing? They're obviously doing something right that maybe the other entities and even the department could learn in that regard. And then on your page 7, and perhaps I missed it, because I tried to listen carefully. The African Nations Championship and African Cups of Nations, is money allocated there? And I'm trying to understand how that fits in with any kind of strategic or any kind of targets that the department is aiming for. How does that fit in? Because I see it as a sports event, so I'm trying to link the two, but I could be missing it. Unless we're talking about people that are going to come in, especially and so forth. That's it too. Thanks very much.
Honourable McIntosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the good book says, without a vision, the people perish. And I must say...
Sorry, Honourable McIntosh. DM. Chair, I'm just getting a bit worried because we've got so many questions already, and we may not do justice to everything. We may even forget some of the questions that are now going to be arising. I wonder if we couldn't split them up. Let us answer this and then start with the Honourable McIntosh, if he's kind enough to agree to that.
Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Thank you, GM. Okay, can we then allow you to respond to the questions that were posed by members?
I think what we'll do is that the happy thing with a team like this, Chairperson, is that I could let any one of them answer all of the questions. So we'll ask DG to just allocate most of the questions. I just want to deal with one or two issues, which I think straddles the two members relating to the presence of illegal persons in our country, and I think that really becomes a matter that seizes us as political heads of the department, both myself and Minister, as well as the officials. And it's quite right. I mean, it's quite true, all things being equal, what you would want to do is to ensure that there are preventative mechanisms before you try and deal with individuals in a way that is not necessarily, you know, on all fours with our values as a country, our Bill of Rights, and so on. It's not a nice thing for us to pick up people illegally and try and deport them. It raises all kinds of questions about humanitarianism. About why it is people actually come into the country, because out of desperation in most instances. It's economic reasons for the most part, given where we are located geographically and otherwise. So I do think that is a question that we must talk about, and it's not an isolated discussion in the sense that not every single developing country has to deal with. Particularly when it pertains to the unequal levels of development that you find between South Africa and its neighboring countries. And I think therein lies a huge area for debate and discussion amongst political parties generally,
And as politicians ourselves, I think that there's time for us to pause and consider what approach as a country we should be taking in this regard. And it can't be that the solution is about deportation. And we certainly do not see it as the ultimate solution. Part of the solution, and not all of it, is, of course, as you point out, both of you, the issue of borderline security, upping our capacity and our systems as far as securing our sovereignty is concerned. But we must remember that you throw money at that problem alone, that in and of itself doesn't solve anything. I have often used the example, and I've studied the example of the U.S. and Mexico border quite extensively because of where I'm located at the moment. That is one of the primary examples of a country which is economically very advanced and a neighboring state that is not. And if you look at the amount of money that is spent by the U.S. government on securing that borderline, it's absolutely enormous. It extends beyond some countries' domestic product, even. And yet, America has never experienced the levels of illegal migration from Mexico than it does at the moment. And the reason, obviously, is economic. The global recession has just brought that into stark focus, and the levels, instead of stabilizing, are actually rising. So the answer doesn't lie only in us securing our borders. I do think that as South Africa we have a lot to do as far as that is concerned, and I quite agree both Advocate Gahn and yourself are raising the same issue. And yes, we do need to invest in quite substantial infrastructure and so on with regard to our land borders in particular. And I'm leaving aside the other issue that you raised, Advocate Kam, for the moment, because others will deal with that as well. But to come back to this point, part of the solution must then also lie in our countries investing in the economic development of our neighbors. And one of those aspects, of course, finds resonance with what we do in terms of our international relations and how, in fact, we hope to generate more trade with our immediate neighbors, but also further on in the African continent. Economic development of the region is therefore inextricably linked to our own security and to our own success as a nation. So I think that is where the thinking has to lie. Insofar as it pertains to how we expect to progress, you have seen reference to a single visa with regard to SADC countries and so on. One of the things that we are also thinking of is looking at possible avenues to explore with regard to visas, special visas, work visas being issued to certain countries in the SADC area and so on. As a quota, but this is still very much something that we're thinking about and trying to develop before we actually implement. And obviously we will come and discuss some of those ideas with yourself as we progress in our own thinking. But it would be very good, I think, for members of the Portfolio Committee to also think about these issues a little bit and come and talk to us about some of your views and so on, so that in us developing these thoughts, we can also consider your own views. But it is a very, very difficult subject, as I say, not only in South Africa, around the world. And it's something that, as politicians, politicians, we certainly need to find a new and innovative and creative ways to solve beyond just deportation. Having said that, of course, I think one of our big problems in this country is that the Immigration Act, the act that this parliament has passed, does criminalize illegal presence in the country. But the extent to which that illegality is treated as such by our criminal justice system leaves a lot to be desired. We've had reports of when people were prosecuted for being here on multiple occasions illegally and so on, where the court simply gave bail. So that can't be the response. I mean, if you are going to enact laws, then the laws should be respected. And it is a serious offense to be in the country illegally. We put a lot of revenue into and a lot of capacity into our ports of entry and so on. And for somebody to ignore all of those and to ignore the laws of the country and be here illegally is a criminal offense. And I think the more we start ourselves taking that very seriously, the more everybody else will. So it's a question of us saying, let us not say don't deport, but let us say, let us respect the laws, and let us certainly try and do more in terms of preventative mechanisms and address this, the very issues that cause illegal migration into our country to begin with, which are usually socioeconomic reasons.
Thanks, DM, and I will deal with questions the way we took the pick when I didn't respond to the question. Let me start with the unprotected coastline. It is part of the plan in terms of the BMA that indicated that the minister would be submitting a cabinet memo here in April, and that cabinet memo is saying now the BMA, that border management agent, must deal with everything around the border, whether it's a land border line, whether it's a border post, or it's an airstrip, or it's a coastal, and all that. Hence, we started now with the harbors at the moment, just to bring the harbor. So it's something which we'll deal with around everything. Then the BMA will decide to say how to deal with it. Chair, I think as we, this thing of performance information, I think we are learning on it every day. I think this, we never thought about it, to say when you take a target and say I will achieve 50%, can you take now what you are not and put it again on how you split? We only put what we can achieve within that time frame. So I think it's a valid input which we're going to go back and look at it. So we didn't sit, we just simply said, no, we'll achieve 50%, and then we didn't say now then the 30% and the 20%. But in terms of, you can say last year on the temporary residents, we were far out. So we first targeted the temporary residence permits, because we are saying there, if I'm in the country, I'm illegal if I don't have that document. But the permanent residence, I'm graduating from temporary to permanent. So we wanted to first move that we achieve our temporary residence permit with the capacity we have, but we're improving that capacity as well as the strategy of how to deal with it. As we said, that we said with the UTA General and say, hey, put what you think you can be achieving. You must be able to demonstrate how you'll be achieving that. But in our other plans, I'm going to go and work it and say, 50% is fine, but let's deal with the 30, let's deal with the 20. It's the same thing which I raised with the registration of children and say, yes, it's good to say we'll register 642, but what do you do with the difference? So it's something which we will build in. So we are really improving on this thing of temporary and permanent residence. What we are doing now, as we're saying, the major problem, there was a paper environment where people apply, this and get lost in the system and all that. So we've put now the track and trace system, which is working well. And now we remember we did brief the committee that one of the strategies we are putting in place, we want now in a province to have a center where where we'll be collecting these applications and send them electronically to the department. So we think that now in 2013-14 we're going to see a lot of improvement around that, but we will work on what we have input in the presentation. Well, the issue of unfilled vacant posts is one we have been doing that in the years to really not just put the numbers which we cannot be able to achieve. So now we've been learning out of the years. That's why now we've put, when we get to these numbers, we've said and we are sure that really these are the positions we need, and we must put clear effort in terms of how we'll do it. One of the pluses we're going to be having, a lot of these positions now are at a lower level. But before, a level 6 had to go and be approved at headquarters. But now a provincial head would be able now to approve level 8 downwards. So that is going to give us a huge improvement in terms of the delays. Hence, we think that the filling of positions now within 6 months is something which is doable. But an important point is the control measure also which has been put in the MMM where the minister and the deputy minister sit. In that meeting, there is agenda item filling of positions. So that now we make sure that what we put, if there are blockages, then we'll request the minister and the deputy minister, what is this blockage? Why we are not able to move with the position? So we really say that's what would be make us to achieve that. But the important one, as I'm saying, is more the decentralization now which we have. Late of registration of birth, yes, the mobile offices, as we indicated, honorable member. Now, you will recall that in the previous meeting, we were talking about the contract which we didn't have with CETA. We have signed that contract with Telkom. CETA has appointed Telkom to deal with that. We have already installed 7 new equipment in the mobile offices, and by end of March, we are planning that out of our family of 117, 31 will be done. And then we've put the ports of entry, which are 15, but by end of May, that was our target, that now those mobile trucks will be equipped with the right equipment. And we've even added cars in the provinces with the suitcases, so they can even able to use 4x4s and small cars to go and register people. Hence, we are saying, if we say we're stopping that, it's because the access is there. People must be able to prove that it's not a question that we didn't have an access to the services. It was you who didn't heed to the service. Then one of the issues we'll be doing, ministers already directed to us that we're going to meet now with the AFRI forum, because that's where now we're having challenges around the farms. So now we'll be going to them and talk and say, what can we do? Whether they say we must come on a Sunday or Saturday, we are prepared to do that. Then, with the disability, honorable member, we're still not happy. As we're saying, we really want to push that if we can come in the next, when we present in the next strategy plan of the department, we can say 2% has been achieved, and then from there we go more. But we are putting that, so the opposition which we have counted to say, for us to achieve 2%, these are the number of posts. And then from there we said, now each unit, these are the posts which you must fill. When that post come, that post cannot come without that. If it is that, we prepared not to fill that position. Is something which we want to really work on. Before we deal with the figures, well, the issue of the 50,000 skilled migrants now annually, that's what we're supposed to, but the figure which we've put for year one now is that we're targeting 20,000. Then in the following year, we said 30, and then at that year is then that we think as a department would be able to at that level. But surely it must come with some changes in the policies I've indicated to say, those you are attracting, I must know that there's a competition. So if our permits, the other countries giving a critical skill a 5 years permit, but us as South Africa is 1 year, so surely I can't compete. So we need now to be looking at those areas that I'm saying. I want to look at the critical skills as a family, want to increase the number of years on that permit, and as well and shortening the time for naturalization if you are a scarce skills, and look at that, and also what you are bringing in the country. Then in terms of what I want to just to on the SADC one, just to say, yes, we are participating. The SADC Secretariat has got countries which are piloting, would be the part of piloting this UniVisa. South Africa is one of those countries, but we need to make sure that the systems are tight and then they are correct as well. Presence on the strategic countries. The first grouping is with the BRICS and as well as SADC. So that's where we want to concentrate on, is in the SADC region and in the BRICS. Well, Jake is going to deal with the assessment. Is the committee equipped? As we said, that one, a status determination committee first per refugee center, so that we make sure that those ones were able to make sure that they will be able to operate efficiently and effectively. So it's something which we have looked at it as a department. Okay, I think now the colleagues can deal. Maybe CFO will start with some questions of the one relating on finance, and then JK will deal with that one of the assessment of the students and whether it's recognized. I think if there's anyone I left. There's a budget. It's under the IST budget. Okay, you can start, JK.
Thank you, DG. Good morning. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, I'll deal with the issue of the how our students assessed. Maybe I should start with saying that the Learning Academy in the Department of Home Affairs is accredited and recognized as a training institute by PEFITA. So all the courses, the DHA qualification that we have is accredited by PEFITA. And it is a national certificate at an NQ5 level. So it's not just a paper, but it has the qualification is at an NQF level 5. The courses that we are doing in conjunction with Wits University or Wits Business School. Is also at an NQF level 6 for our junior managers, and NQF level 7 for our middle managers, and an NQF level 9 for our senior managers. I can also add that we have just been recognized and accredited by Palama as well to roll out the program, the induction program into government for them. So everyone that will be that will be employed by the Department of Home Affairs, we will do that induction program for them by the Learning Academy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Question, let me start with the question of the GPW allocation. Previously, GPW was a trading account and it was funded almost 100% by the fiscal. Over the years, they've been, I think, improving their financial management processes, and the printing business for them is growing. I mean, they print for almost everyone in government, with Home Affairs as their biggest client. So I think if we look at their projected profit for the next financial, or for this current financial year, they are looking at 106 million of profit. So together with National Treasury, it was decided that based on their assessment, based on Treasury's assessment, they will be sustainable going forward. The profit that they're making will be able to cover the expenses that they are incurring. So I think that's one thing that we can learn from them. And I think for our own trading account, we are learning on what processes they've put in place. They've just refreshed their machines, which means that in the outer years, they will be able to get more money because now they've got new machines, and then the maintenance cost will reduce. So those are some of the things why they will be sustainable going forward. If we look at the AFCON and the African Championships, we facilitate the people coming into the country. That's why Treasury allocates money for big events. Even the World Cup will allocate money, the AFCON, and obviously we need to make sure that we market the country so that people can come in, and while they are in, we facilitate. That's when you have lots of people working overtime. You have to deploy more people to the border post for those events. If we look at there was a question raised about the asylum seeker. I just need to check because the asylum seeker budget for this year, it was 58 million, and then it was revised to 64. So, and in the current financial year is 61 million, and I think the revision is based on the few millions that was allocated then to increase the budget for the refugee centers. But I wouldn't say it has decreased because it came from 58 to 61 million.
If all questions have been answered, then Honorable McIntosh, it's your time. And noting Honorable Matebe, Honorable Bosman.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. As I was pleasantly interrupted by the Deputy Minister, if the good book says, if without a vision, the people perish, and I must compliment the DG. It's a great vision, and it's really exciting to read through the presentations and to see a department that is doing its best to have a vision, but also to manage its work well. And it's always good to see all the makuluskops, as we say, the top brass, and they're always so smartly dressed. I sometimes feel I should get some advice on where they buy their suits and shirts. Thank you very much. I actually found this a very interesting presentation, Madam Chair, because there are a number of issues which come up. First of all, this border management could be not a monster, but it could be a huge responsibility for the department. Now, as I understand it, they are now taking over Public Works' thingabob, which is a concern I had. Now, look, I'm sure they've got it under control, but if you're going to do that, then the department is going to need a core staff of really good professionals in the form of a quantity surveyors, project managers, engineers, architects, or even if it keeps it very small. And I'm not one of those people who's opposed to consultants. I prefer to call them service providers. And in many cases, bringing in a service provider on an ad hoc basis is very efficient, it's quick, and it doesn't have this problem of the... So I think, I know there's something going to cabinet and all this sort of thing, but Madam Chair, I think we are going to ride a big, big horse here if this comes into the department. And I sense perhaps there's a slight underplaying of it. But I think we as a portfolio committee should be aware of that. And could I just say that if you are going to set up something like that, there are a huge number of skills in retired engineers, architects. All right, they're all old white men like me. But don't underestimate those guys. They have got lots of skills. They love South Africa. They would love to make a contribution. And in many cases, they don't want to be tied down for their life's career. They're very happy to do 3 years or something and to help the department to set up that unit. Then on the question of misconduct cases, it comes up on page 29 and then on page 10, and there's a mention of the contract. Now, Madam Chair, my question is, can we not look in Home Affairs? It is a security department. Can we not draw up an employment contract, which means if somebody is found guilty of misconduct, they're fired. Chop, chop. And not only that, but in the contract, it's also that it's understood that the Home Affairs is at liberty to inform all other government departments of why the person's employment was terminated. So you get none of this holding back on it. Because I do think to have somebody, as we have heard before, found guilty of corruption, and then he just drags on, he's suspended, and then he moves to another department, or he, she does. On the employment equity, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't mind if we're 100% black, as long as the guys do it. You know, I like the communist Chinese. I don't mind what color the cat is, as long as it catches the mouse. And I think Honorable Grace Portman made the point that we mustn't do that. Yet at the same time, Madam Chair, we have a diverse society. And like you go to a police station, you're Indian, you actually feel a bit more comfortable to have an Indian policeman help you. And if you're Xhosa speaking, you like to do that. You don't want to have to speak Venda to the policeman. So it's, you know, in that sense, I think we want a sensitivity. And we want to have a... you know, a department which serves our nation that is the rainbow or fruit salad nation, whatever, because some people say the problem with rainbows, there's no black in it. But if it's a fruit salad nation, then we must have a diversity. So, but the important thing, I think, in this department is results. We want competent people and who come out of our academy knowing what they're doing. I just, perhaps I missed it, and I'm sorry, occasionally one has to deal with something urgent. On page 14, the call center, the white is new. The Cubans, I think, are not unsymbolically in red, because we know what their politics is. What interests me is, what exactly are the Cubans doing? I mean, what's their project? I mean, we know we had them in to help at Ortia with the entrance, so that's a question. Then, Madam Chair, I think the matter of skills and immigrants has been dealt with. And you know, I'm pleased that the Deputy Minister, Madam Chair, has had a look at the United States. You know, the United States is a land of immigrants. I mean, that's the whole basis of that country, is immigrants are welcome. But the point is, they don't want them to come in illegally. And now they sit in the United States with something like 30 million illegal immigrants. Now they want to legalize them. And this is a huge debate. And they're not just Mexicans. They've all kinds of people, you know, Eritrean, Ethiopian, etc. But the Americans, their attitude is, we want people to be legalized, and how do we do it? And I don't think that's a bad idea, because these immigrants want to get ahead. Often they come with good skills. It looks to me as though the Deputy Minister's got that under her belt. And then the other question I've got is on this matter of birth registration. Madam Chair, I think this birth registration, I don't think we've plugged all the holes. The one thing is the costs. If we have a full-time member of staff at each hospital, if we say there's a matron or a senior sister who gets paid extra and she's trained to do the computers and does it, but some of these hospitals are quite small. They don't have a huge number of babies. So to have a full-time, so that's the issue. The second one is, unfortunately, we often have babies dying. How do we handle that? Secondly, and I know they're looking at the mother registration, babies that are born to foreigners, that are, and there are many of them born in our hospitals, and they're from, how do we sort that out? Now, I'm just concerned that it's not happening. And, you know, I'm just thinking of an example. I just had a grandson born in Bloemfontein. Now, my son had a lot of difficulty getting registered. Oh, he was born in a private hospital because his parents are doctors. But they, the point is, you know, I'm interested to know why did he have any problem at all with it. And what happens to the person living on the border of Lesotho near Mount Fletcher who has the baby at home? How does she register her baby? You know, it's, and look, I think it's bad to make rules for ex, but I really think we need to think through and look at and do a sort of what's it, brainstorm on this birth registration to make sure that it's actually good, because you know at the moment it's like apple pie. Birth registration is wonderful, that's the answer to all our problems. But what worries me is there are a lot of loopholes, and maybe you could ask, you could reply on how you're doing on that. And then just one question to our very good Chief Financial Officer report. Page 10, I'm sorry, you know, all these acronyms are quite, for guys my age, are a bit difficult. What's a PMDS on page 10? Sorry? Say it quickly. Problem management. Okay, all right. Okay. All right, fine. Answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable McIntosh. Honorable Matebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. It was a good presentation. You really come from a long walk. From 1994 to date, really, you've made changes in our department. Though I still got a concern, which is worrying me day and night. Unknown numbers, accurate numbers of asylum seekers and refugees do so in this country. Because I'm not answered. I've been asking that almost every day when we're here. We don't know who is who, where, what are they doing, when, and how. And I think also that one, it also have a, it's a challenge for department to manage refugee and asylum across the country. Secondly, is a question of a progress. What progress can be reported on achievement to renew target of positive skills? And as a rural primitive girl from Mose, from Koshima Tebes village, I had a problem when it talks about the child bombs, because at some stage we don't have roads, we don't have mobile clinics, we don't have anything. So that one is not a question of maybe we'll be blaming you as a department, but in any case, the roads also, road department should be engaged as well. At some stage, children, they just get born in my rural area and are not registered. So I'm appealing of the mobile clinics be everywhere in the country. Lastly, the port of entry is a nightmare. Some of us, we use that port of entry in the 80s when you go to exile. And when you come back, it's still the same port of entry. There's nothing to do. I think it's a high time that we should engage all cluster, security clusters, be involved to make sure that our port of entry are safe. Thank you. Well, from Perry.
Thank you, Chair. I'm still postman, Chair. I thought the president spoke about filling vacancies will have a turnaround. around of about 4 months, if I'm correct, and the department is in 6 months. Well, what are we doing? The other thing is, Chair, we spoke about the MDP as the department, but I had thought that within the three programs, the easiest way for our strategic plan would be to say, here is our national development plan, here are the six pillars, under administration, these six pillars get listed, and we said as the department, this is what we're going to do under these pillars. Under citizen affairs, same thing. And immigration, same thing. So that then we move along with the national development plan. We don't hear anything about the new growth path. How are we integrating that into the whole plan? Because you could hear, basically, it's about job creation and so on, but yes, it's there, but you don't feel the gist of the new growth path. In terms of our strategic intervention project, the 17 strategic intervention projects, I'm not sure which ones are actually covered by the department where we're seeing these are the ones. I think in terms of IT, in terms of your infrastructure around building, integrating the borders, I'm saying around the borders because I'll be talking about linking the SADC region to the country and so on and so forth. So it also within the plan itself, it talks about the women and the plan. Here there's a paragraph there or a highlighted part that speaks around women and the plan itself. And I don't know whether we are integrating that in our strategic plan. And in terms of the announcement or the SONA, when we were debating the SONA, one of the issues the president raised was that we are expecting the department and the provinces to align themselves with the national development plan. So I'm saying, yes, it's early, but I think we need to start moving that direction. The other thing that I do not pick up in the plan is the issue relating to when we changed the plan, when we amended the Act, the Immigration Act, there were issues that we said had to be addressed administratively. And we don't feel that particular plan incorporated into the strategy. How are we going to then achieve those things? Because yes, we know we're delivering around all the issues, it's fine what we have done here, but it doesn't then give us the same direction, whether we're still going the same direction as the entire country. And that is what has to be done. So I'm not sure how we're going to deal with that. Maybe in future we need to have a draft before we have this document, so that when we have input, then you have enough time to can then adjust and ultimately submit the final report that has incorporated our views. Right now we're going to say things, but at the end of the day, they will be noted, but they may not be effected in the document itself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bosman. CFO, you've answered the issue of the AG's findings for the last year, and especially with regard to contingent assets from DICO, but I'm a bit worried because it seems we are moving at a slow pace, but I'm watching the space. And I would like to hear about the contingent liability of 1.2 billion for legal claims. How far have you gone to address that? Irregular expenditure to non accredited vendors, how far are you with addressing that? Irregular spending on labor disputes as well. You didn't touch anything about the trading account. How far are you with the issue of the trading account? Because you didn't mention it here, but in this document that was sent earlier, there is something about the trading account. If you could maybe brief us on that. And the issue of the single visa for SADC, which is a good proposal, but there were conditions with regard to the implementation of is it movement of people around SADC? I'm not sure if I'm saying the right thing, but there were conditions with regard to the movement of people around SADC. I want to know as to, are we still going to consider the conditions as per the SADC protocol with regard to this single visa for SADC people? And the issue of modernization of the department, if you could unbundle that further, whether do we mean that systems are going to, you know, talk to one another, or do we still have systems that are going separate ways? What do we mean by modernization of the department? We do support it because technology is moving very fast. And the issue of post has been addressed. Did you, with regard to online birth registration, I heard, you know, you were putting it, let me say, sugar-coated it. But if we go out to those hospitals, it's a different scenario altogether. We visited Eastern Cape late last year, and we went to a rural hospital in the real, real rural area. There was no actually proper working together, working relationship with the facility there. You know that the poor woman was stationed at the gate and the maternity ward is somewhere else. And every time she must go to the maternity ward to go and find out as to how many babies were delivered, if there were any for that day, which is a problem, because we noticed that not only in that hospital, in many of, let me say, some of the hospitals that we have visited who are online, there is no proper working relationship between the officials of the health and our, I think, I'm not sure whether they take the officials of the Home Affairs as prodigal children. I don't understand, how do they take Home Affairs officials? So I think if you could try and work with your counterpart DG in health to see as to how can you address that issue as well. And yeah, the issue of the 11 priority port of entry that are to be improved. I'm also worried as to how are we going to handle that one, because of the funds that have been shifted from Public Works to Home Affairs, am I right, CFO? We've been raising concern with the way Public Works does its work, especially when it comes to Home Affairs. We are not happy in the manner that they are treating or treating the Home Affairs Department. But it, like Honorable McIntosh, I'm worried as to how are we going to deal with that, the issue of improving residential accommodation. Because I'm sure even here you're going to need project managers and all that kind of stuff. Ambassador program. Can you explain ambassador program vis-a-vis provincial champion? That will be all from my side. I'm not sure if there are any more follow-ups. We will take another round of it. Over to you, dear.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I've run out of space on my page, so I hope I captured everybody's questions. But I'll try and answer a few and then hand over to DG to respond to others. Just to start with Honourable McIntosh. Well, thank you very much for those questions. And certainly the BMA is going to be a huge responsibility, and you're quite right to watch the space. We, as you pointed out, will be taking something to Cabinet, so it's not a fait accompli at this stage, and all depends on what the outcome of that is. But I do suggest that the Portfolio Committee does take an input. Once that process is finalized, we'll be able to come to the Portfolio Committee, hopefully around July, August, with very concrete plans. Around particularly one of the issues that we'll be looking at is upgrading the actual ports of entry. I think it was pointed out by Honourable Mate that those ports of entry have not changed for many, many years. When they were built initially and the infrastructure was developed, it was for a different purpose and a different era. We certainly didn't have open borders. We didn't engage the rest of the world at that stage in the way that we do now, and certainly not the rest of the continent. And clearly those facilities are completely outdated and, as I say, built for a different purpose. So that would be certainly one of our big priorities, which speaks to all of the issues that are raised around the new growth path in terms of economic trade, development, and engagement issues around issues of job creation and really uplifting the trajectory of our economic development because obviously in the modern era cannot survive as a country, economically or otherwise, with closed borders. And so our vision is very much in line with that. Unfortunately, with the difficulties with public works over the years, it's just not been a very conducive relationship and hasn't kept pace with our own priorities as far as those ports are concerned. Having said that, of course, one of our big areas of focus will be the issue of our processes and the security initiatives around the ports of entry, and that's certainly a medium to long-term process as well, which must incorporate at a later stage the borderline as well. So I think therein and in terms of detail, you might want to call us back around July, August for some kind of specific input around some of these initiatives, and I think we'd be better placed to assist there. In terms of misconduct cases, I want us to be under no illusion. In fact, as DG said yesterday, as a department, we give a really top priority to the issue of corruption within our ranks. We do not want to leave you with the impression that people who are corrupted, we discipline them and then suddenly we maintain them in the department. That is not the case. We have disciplined people, and people who have been found guilty of fraud or corruption have been dismissed. What we can't stop, of course, is those people appealing through the courts outside. But as far as we're concerned, we've taken a very, very hard line on these issues. And we certainly, and one of the reasons why we're very keen on the issue of vetting, which is what the DG spoke about initially in terms of our employment contract, is that we do not want to be caught in a situation simply because the vetting processes take place outside of our department, that we actually employ people who have got a criminal record unknown to us, you know, when they don't disclose it and when our preliminary checks through the interview process do not realize this kind of information. So we're very, very astute when it comes to the issue of corruption. We do, however, find that there are continuous allegations of corruption being made, but people don't necessarily come forward to support those. And that becomes enormously difficult if you're compliant with the rule of law and you have a Bill of Rights in the country as we do. That makes it enormously difficult for us when we do engage with disciplinary processes and so on to actually prove the guilt of persons. And so it's really up to all of us, I think, in the room to be a little more vigilant and really urge where people do come, I'm sure they do come to yourselves as well, to complain about our officials, to urge them to assist us in this regard. We have been on record on more than one occasion, Chair, saying that we would leave no stone unturned to deal with this issue quite ruthlessly. As to the issue of 100% black or fruit salad or a rainbow, look, I personally hold a bit of a different view. I do think that we're a very unique country. And what makes us unique ultimately is that unlike other countries, we do not require people to conform to a particular standard. And this is the absolute wonder of our nation, that we pride ourselves in a celebration of each person's diversity. And I really think that in who we are and what we are, we should be reflecting that diversity. I don't think we're doing terribly well, particularly with the minority groups, and I think that the Portfolio Committee should hold us more accountable to that. We do need to reflect that diversity. I quite agree that Home Affairs should be the home for everybody, and that in who we are and what we are, we should be reflective of that. We've spent some time talking about the issue of disability, but my concern is that we don't talk too much, and perhaps it's a bit difficult for us to do so, but we don't talk too much about our diversity, and I think that we can do a lot more as far as that is concerned. There were a number of questions around birth registration. I'd be very keen, Honourable McIntosh, if you can let us know precisely what the problems were with your son, because in knowing what those problems were, you know, we find that we iron out a lot of our procedural issues, our business systems and so on sometimes do go wrong. I'm a bit surprised because I've not had too many queries around birth registration and what pertains there, but if there were problems around that, we'd be very keen to learn about it, and we'll certainly investigate and see what the issues are. As far as foreigners who give birth in our country is concerned, I think there's an internationally accepted practice that even if South Africans give birth overseas, for instance, the law applies equally to them in the sense that the obligation to register their children within 30 days at a South African mission is just as enforceable as anywhere else. So the way we would do it is we would record the birth but not put it onto the National Population Register. And so what they would do is they would take that birth record and go to the embassy as proof that there was such a birth. And they would necessarily then have to register through their embassy onto their own individual national population register or equivalents of that. As to plugging the holes, you know, we do want to say to you that, and in fact all of the honourable members, that we think we're doing a good job as far as this is concerned in terms of trying to extend our footprint to ensure that particularly when it comes to people who live in very rural areas and not even necessarily rural areas but perhaps remote areas of the country, that we try and service them through hospitals, because we clearly think that people at some stage, whether it's during pregnancy or at birth or even after birth, You know, we have a wonderful vaccinations program in this country where our children are vaccinated within a certain period after birth. I think the first vaccination has to be administered within 2 weeks of birth. And that footprint is quite extensive in the country as well as in rural areas and so on. And this is why we partnered with health, because at some point a child would need to be taken to a health facility. You may know, and Chair, you're quite right when you raise the issue of infrastructure. I don't think that at certain places the infrastructure is necessarily optimal. It may even be, as you point out, that the relationships are not the best. However, we could either sit back and fold our arms and not do anything, or we could proceed and hope to work through some of these challenges, etc. And that's really what we chose to do, is to do precisely that. Where it works phenomenally well. I must say, I was so taken when we went to the Free State in one of the township hospitals there, where the matron just took charge of this process. It was incredible. Here was an official who had nothing to do with home affairs, but she made sure that register was in her possession all the time, and she went and she correlated this thing with our official who was there, because she regarded it as her civic duty. And that's what we want to see more of. You know, people must stop thinking that we must pay them extra to do their civic duty. I think this is the wrong notion that we're inculcating into our civil service. This is about giving a child an identity, probably the best start that you could have in your life. The biggest gift that anybody could give you is this notion that you belong, and that you are worth something, and that you have this thing called an identity. And really, that is the vision. May not work everywhere, but I think at the point that we are at, we think that it's something that is achievable. We certainly would want to be in every single locality, but we can't. And where we can't, we try and use those mobile trucks. And where there are rural areas where there are no roads, Honorable Matebe pointed to her village, for example. One of the things that we're now looking at is even using 4x4s. So we're not going to wait for roads to be built or anything of the sort. Recently, in the Northern Cape, the provincial office took delivery of how many? 19. 11 4x4s and 19 cars altogether, just to facilitate, because obviously that province is a huge geographical area without roads and so on. And to get to really small numbers of people in outlying farms and so on becomes quite difficult. We're moving in that direction. We do want to extend our footprint, and we do believe that a lot of our problems, may not be everything, Honorable McIntosh, but certainly a lot of our problems are going to be solved with us addressing this issue of South Africans registering their children within 30 days of birth. And we are very resolved to ensure that late registrations of birth come to an end. And to this end, really, it's a question of us needing every single South African to partner with us. It's not a question of the department, you know, being able to do this by itself. If there are areas in your constituencies or in your home areas, or you know of other members of parliament who are experiencing these problems, please, please, please do not hesitate to tell us. One of the things that we have done this year is we've asked our provincial managers, who regularly go out to, you know, we have programs with our mobile trucks and so on to reach outlying areas. What we've asked them to do is something different this year. We've asked them to tell us about those areas, geographically speaking, in their provinces that they have not yet been to, and to let us know about it and develop a program around those areas, what we call a mopping up operation, so that there is no place in South Africa, Chair, that we have not touched. And if, as I say, there are little settlements, villages, little towns in remote areas that you know we have not touched, we please would ask you to come forward and let us know, because this is a crucial time. DG has spoken about 2 years. If we can reduce that 2 years in terms of late registrations, we should do that, because this is a national priority, really. So I've talked too much. Maybe I just want to say that with the refugees, I'll hand over to DG now because he gets paid more than me. just in terms of numbers of asylum seekers in the country and refugees, if we are asking about the number of refugees, we'd be able to give you that number. What we may not be able to give you is the is a very accurate number of asylum seekers at any given point, because we ourselves are in the dark. People come into our asylum seekers, our refugee reception centers as asylum seekers without any plan on our part. So, you know, we have no idea how many people are going to come at any given point. And this is part of the difficulty around management of those centers. So in terms of statistics, one of the things that we've tried to do with the refugees reception centers this year is to try and monitor stats a little more closely. And as I reported to you last week, I can't remember when we met last, we have had some very positive results, for instance, in our Durban reception center, around the quick turnaround of processing those applications, which is really something that we want to roll out, all capacity dependent, of course, in the other refugee centers, and hopefully we'll be able to, in the near future, give you more accurate stats, although, again, asylum seekers become a bit difficult, refugees certainly. One of the things we can't do, and you're quite right, we can't do is tell you where those refugees are once they've gotten their status, because unlike most countries in the world, we do not provide living arrangements and accommodation for refugees as government, for obvious reasons, one of them being historic. But the truth of the matter is the advantage of being able to provide accommodation to those who are refugees is that you're able to restrict their activities, monitor their activities, as well as know a little bit more about them in terms of location, and also allow for a decent level of integration into the country. One of the things that we were quite astounded by in the European countries that we visited was that refugees are not allowed to just live anywhere. They're told, you will live in this borough, in this province, and nowhere else. Asylum seekers, likewise, are highly restricted in their movement. And one of the advantages of that is that you don't have pockets of people who then live together as nationalities from their home country. What you have is a more integrated way of facilitating their living and lifestyle into a country. And so that really becomes an integration program, so that people don't see them as aliens and as foreigners and so on, but that they become part and parcel of the fabric of society very, very quickly. There are also educational programs, language training programs that are offered by these countries and so on. Of course, we don't have the resources for all of that, and so obviously the disadvantage then pertains to us not having those bits of information around where people live, etc. DG, I think over to you.
Thanks, Pam. I'll start with the Honourable Chair. This issue of the single visa, but other questions will be answered by self. Chair, remember, this thing is in two ways. There is a visa in terms of subject countries moving between each other. in terms of that, there was an agreement that we must have a visa waiver first amongst the SADC countries. Now what is left is Angola and Madagascar. The others who've got a visa waiver, so they can move freely within the SADC. Then there was the other one now to say, I am a foreign national. I want to visit South Africa. Can I get a uni visa? When now all when they come to SADC, they will use that same visa. Is the one now where we are participating on it? Because we have to be a pilot. We need to know what systems. There is a proposal that the system must be in Botswana, and then I'm able that if I apply, I get into that database, and then we can ensure that we control. But that has to. Is after we are sure that our systems are really integrated. Then in terms of the unbundled, the IT modernization, maybe Silo will come back, but for me just to say, it is only having three pillars, is paperless, this whole modernization. Also biometric, and thirdly integration. So that is the pillar where this IT modernization will stand, so that we make sure that we no longer have too much paper in home affairs, and we use biometric even when we deal with the issue of the asylum seekers. Even our port of entry, as people come in, we take a biometric. Then wherever you go, we'll be able to trace. Whether tomorrow you go and open a bank account, together with the banks, we'll know. Whether you go and get married with the banks, we'll know. You go and work or whatever, you'll be that one person. Mr. Mkhize is going to deal with the issues of online birth registration, but I take that advice that we'll continue to meet with the Department of Health. How are we going to achieve this? Chair, the 11 ports of entry is only around that 130 million we have. So that fund are with us. So we'll be able now that it's not the one which is sitting with Public Works. So that's what we'll do. Though we know that, but we'll be doing that in the landlord, which is Public Works. But we are saying that cabinet memo, which is going in April, must remove those walls so that now, as this thing is handed over to Home Affairs, that if I've got 130 million rand, why can't I renovate, I do anything in a port of entry? Then everyone's going to explain the ambassador, I'll explain the champion. The champion, chair, we were trying to say, how can we integrate what is happening at a provincial level and headquarters? Because the provincial heads, they don't sit in the MMM where there is a minister, deputy minister, and ourselves. They only come to management meetings. And we said, no, let's get now at a DDG and the DG level. Each one must be a champion of a province. So that when we're sitting in the MMM, we discuss something, I must be able to say, hey, I know Eastern Cape, I'm a champion of Eastern Cape. This is the matter, this is the issue, or this will affect that particular province in this way and that way. So that was the idea of having a champion, so that we make sure, like now, yesterday, when we were, last week, sorry, when we were launching at Northern Cape, the champion for Northern Cape is the one who must make sure that when our political principal goes there, all the things they've done, are they ready, they have tried and make sure that they understand everything around that project. But you now, everyone will explain you now the ambassador program. Let me go now to what I've just touched on, this of employment contract, Honorable McIntosh. Well, as we said, that these are the changes which government is looking at across through DPSA to say what can we do to make sure that people are accountable. So it's something which now at SMS level is already there, that now you sign a performance, this employment contract. But at the moment, it's only DGs who've got a five-year contract. But they will be taking it down in order to make sure that this process of people permanent and having it difficult to deal with it, it will eliminate those issues. What UPENS would be doing for us is to deal with when we work on the National Population Register to make sure that we get, in terms of security and this biometric I'm talking about, it, an integrated system between our citizens and as well as foreign nationals, but we have a single view of anyone who is in the country. I think Mr. Mkhize will touch on the employees as well. I think the issue is what DMS said. We were starting at Libombo. I remember there was a meeting between this committee and Public Works Committee when we had a problem with the no change in any of the border posts. But Libombo is one of those. A chairperson in the Easter will be starting to use that border post as it is a new border post which has been built with that concept of one-stop border post. We're doing it without the pedestrian clearing point. Now, in the Easter, we'll be doing that. We hope that the minister is going to open it after, because we're going to test it now in April and beyond that. But it's a new building. I think that that probably will spend about 350 million rand to build that border post. So it's going to be trying to resolve a lot of issues. Then now with Zimbabwe, that is Bait Bridge, in this Easter, we're going to be trying the same thing where we wanted to clear buses in a show ground before they get into the border post. By the time they get there, they're already cleared and escorted. So we have what now the other thing we're going to be doing in the Easter, because we found out that one of the problems is the traffic control. We've gone to defense, we've got about 350 which we just recruited only for the Easter period. Others are going to be deployed in the gates, traffic control, and see that what will the sort of can do things differently. So the land border post, which we earmarked even on this money, is Maseru Bridge, is the Bait Bridge, and what we're doing now in Libombo, so that we can show that we're doing things differently. Honourable Botman, I think the first point, I think, is the one which we have said. I think we need to look at that, Chairperson, we will. Because now what we have done with the Auditor General, we submitted the plan to them before we finalized it. It makes no difference. We can, at that point of a draft, because even with the minister, we start before, I think we do the retreat in, it was November. Yeah. So it means now if we have done the retreat in November, and then there's nothing now after that because we've got the policy direction, then maybe around about February we can submit the draft. Because at that stage we have done the SONA, and then if there's a hotlas, they've already happened, then we can come at that point and bring the draft. Then if there are inputs, we can take them before we finalize. Because really, now, we will say like now what Honorable Gam said, if I had that opportunity at that time, I would have put what is the 50%, what is the 30 or 20, something like that. So I think that point is really welcome. Well, we tried, maybe we've not been specific, maybe put it too high level, what we think we'll be doing around NDP and so on. That's why we tried, just let's put it, was not one of our problems was to make sure that we're able to achieve what is in the in the pillars. Most especially, as we said that now, for us, we are really, really a gate in terms of this economic development, because if our permitting regime is not able to respond quickly, because business permit is issued by Home Affairs, work permit is issued by Home Affairs, if now we're not working together with Department of Economic Development, Department of Labor, DTI, then the NDP will a little bit shake. But if now we're able, so we will, as I'm saying, that those things that they may be at the ITAP, so we need to expand further on them. So everyone will take now the issue of why are we filling the post 6 months instead of 4 months, as the president has said. And then still we can touch a little bit on the IT modernization. And Mr. Mkhize, a little bit on the this thing of birth registration, but it is really a matter, because that's why we're saying our NPR are standing on that pillar. And then CFO will deal now with the finance issues.
Okay. Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. With regards to the Ambassador Program and how it differs from the Provincial Champions, in our quest to actually harness a culture where we would also reposition ourselves as an employer of choice, what we have done is we've introduced the DHA Cadre Program, where we've identified about 200 staff members nationally who would also serve the role of change agents. But in essence, what the program seeks to do is to ensure that our officials' behaviors and attitudes and their conduct is actually exemplary. So what we have done, we have trained them on some change management intervention, and this includes protocol training, it includes security awareness training, it includes understanding and knowing what the values of the department are, and really so that they are also able to raise any flags for us on challenges that they might anticipate in the workplace. And what we then do, any of those challenges are then channeled to any of the line managers or respective branch heads so that they are able to actually be resolved. We've also taken it even to the level of looking at their dress code, how they present themselves, and we've also taken it to the level of ensuring that they are rewarded through the performance management process. DG then explained the provincial champion. With regards to filling of vacancies, if you look at the strat plan in the beginning of the financial year for 2012-13, we had initially, if I could say, abided by what the President had stated in SONA, that we should fill all the posts within 3 months. However, midway through the year, we realized that when we had actually mapped out the recruitment process in its entirety, that it was not really a smart target or a realistic one for the department, taking into account the volumes of positions that we had and also linking it back to the HR capacity that would then have been needed to support the business to actually achieve the goal. So we've taken it back to 6 months because we believe it is actually more realistic in terms of a turnaround time. We've linked it also back to the norm within DPSA, and government as a whole, actually, it goes up to 12 months. But it's not to say that we will not strive to actually fill posts within a shorter time. If you also look at our turnaround time on average, it was sitting at 5.5 months. Yes, in this year it has increased to just over 7 months. So we also felt that we needed to look at that. If you also look at the vacancy rate, yes, we are sitting at 14% as compared to the previous financial years, but that is, we have reasons for that. We've had to look at certain projects within the department, like, for example, the ports of entry, handling those posts, the 247 plus the 96 for the harbors, and so on. So we've also applying project management principles in trying to ensure that we fill all of our posts. With our reprioritization as well this year, going into the next financial year, we are aware that we will also be improving the general turnaround time and also achieving on the target of the 6 months. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to respond to the modernization. You know, central to the modernization program is to ensure that we have all the systems integrated and automate the current manual processes in order to contribute towards a home affairs as a paperless environment that is secure. Because as you would know, Chair, is we building home affairs as a security department, and technology is going to be central to that. Now, we have different role players in the education program based on the capacity and skills in that area. And I think the question of the role of the QN was informed by the fact that if you look at the QNs, they've got a very they've got skills in terms of the core backend systems and the security as far as the technology. I think they are ranked top five in the within top five in the world in terms of, you know, IT security, together with your Russians and your Israelites and so forth. So they are going to help us with building the core backend system that is like placing the national population register and ensure that all our systems are integrated with the front end applications that are designed by the SARS, because as you know, SARS is very good in terms of those technologies like the e-filing. So we want to apply or leverage on that technology to be used in home affairs. And then of course we've got, you know, other stakeholders like your CSIR. We know they've got a very young professors and scientists that are, you know, have been helping us in terms of designing some of the technical specifications, for example, for the smart card and so forth. And then the project is going very well. We should be able to conclude and start piloting by the end of June in terms of smart ID.
Chair, the issues that were raised in relation to the audit findings, Chair, it looks like we are really not pushing, but we are pushing. Our people are really working almost 7 days a week to really, you know, there's lots of work that needed to be done on the qualification matter, specifically because it goes back from August 2004 up to, we even need to deal with the current financial year. At the same time, while we are looking at the previous financial year. So where I'm sitting, and I think we did brief the Director General, I think a week ago, in terms of where we are, and you could see the progress that the team that is working on this have made. So I think just to allay the fears, we are getting there, and by end of April, by end of March, our plan is to finish everything relating to the previous financial years and up to February 2013 by end of March, and we think it's achievable. If we look at the legal claims, there haven't been much changes. There haven't been any change. We still have the case. If we look at immigration, the way we've categorized them, we've got immigration cases, we've got civic services cases, we've got disputed tenders, we then have contracts and others, which is like 1.7 million. So currently we're still sitting at 1.268 billion of legal claims against the department. For immigration services, it's sitting at 433 million, and with one biggest case of 307 million, which is the Wollenhaupt case. This case has been in our contingent liability listing, I think over 10 years, if I'm not, over this year it will be the 10th year. We are engaging with the state attorney's office so that we can see if we can take it out, because there haven't been any changes, the person has not come back, so why should we sit with an amount of 300 million, which we, according to us, it will never be realized. If we look at civil services, there are cases of, the total contingent liabilities for civic services cases is 3.8 million, and those cases are also quite old. They date back to 2005, and there haven't been any changes, and also there haven't been any new cases.
for civic services. If you look at tenders, there are only two cases for tenders amounting to 630 million rand. And there we've got Velo IT for 28 million, and we've got New Dawn Technologies for 602 million. Also, no movement in these two. I think New Dawn Technologies, they did try to resuscitate this, but it didn't really go anywhere. And if we look at contracts, it's sitting at 198 million. The biggest there is Double Ring for 171 million. After writing all the, there were a lot of letters that they've written, I think to the minister, I think even to the chair of the portfolio committee. But when it comes now to writing to the courts, nothing is happening. So there we also, I think that's a matter that needs to I don't think it will go anywhere, but I don't know. Chili Bush, we've got 18 million. So also there, I mean, if you look, 198 million, almost 180 is those two cases. The rest are small cases. I think we had an increase of like 1 million on contracts. And then, so I think we will be showing almost the same number, but the that big case of immigration will then, I think it will increase a bit because of exchange rates, because it's a case which is in dollar, is dominated by a dollar, and it will then change with the foreign currency changes. If we look at the chair, the issue of the irregular expenditure, our main irregular expenditure related to us not complying to the CIGB Act. What we've done, and even this has delayed some of the look and feel project, because we did realize once that some of the quotations were not done according to that. We had to cancel, go back to square one and deal with this. So we've put processes in place in our checklist that we use for appointing tenderers for or service providers for the look and feel project. We've made sure that the issue of the CIDB is dealt with, or it's one of the things that people need to tick before they can go forward and appoint the service providers. The other issue that was raised in the irregular expenditure was non-compliance to supply chain management processes. We've done workshop at all the provinces in terms of the supply chain management processes, what needs to happen when you are procuring, so that everybody understands what they need to do. They can't just go and appoint a service provider without following due process. The issue of the trading account, I think I didn't touch it directly, but when I talk of the DECO account from 1st of April 2012 up to now, I'm talking about the trading account, because all the money that we are collecting from 12 stations, it is going into the trading account. What we should have done then, we should have then, because we always, when we are reporting on our quarterly spending or the revenue that we've collected, we look at the trading account. So the trading account is there, it's operating. We are even looking with the IT modernization, how do we make sure that in each and every office we've got a system which is plugged into the banks. When the money is collected, it then matches directly into the, it then matches with our bank accounts, and we don't need to do all these manual processes that we are following. So I think by end of February we've already collected around 500 million from only local revenue. DECO has paid us some money. We just need to then process that into the trading account. So, I think we've already paid around 300 million from that 500 million to GPW for the forms, and also for the cash in transit and the courier services to Skynet. So the checking account is there, it's operating, we are able to defray our expenses, and I think it's looking good, because we've approached Treasury to say, isn't it possible that we can use this money that is remaining in the trading account to fund the rollout of the smart card? I think those were the questions in terms of what was raised by the chair.
Thanks very much, Chair. From my side, just the issue of the birth registration. We'll start by indicating that, yes, around the issues of the risks related to the borderline birth registrations, there are requirements that we are having in place that people must produce to prove that they are citizens. And among them really is that issue of if a mother is giving birth there, then we require the issues of the ID. That must be presented, and then we are working also quite closely with the local offices. Sometimes when we're dealing with birth registration, we do also use to just confirm whether this is a citizen when you are on our population register and the HANIS system. We then require that you also do online verification as one of the mechanisms to prove that. However, as the Director General indicated, that the recent launch of the new unabridged birth certificate requires also that we verify both parents as whether they are citizens or not, and that has really assisted in terms of strengthening security around this matter. As a measure of prevention of our officials being involved in corrupt activities about fraudulent birth registrations, which might still happen, but if it does, it happens now through other mechanisms, not just the way people were doing it before, is that we, among key priorities, was that introduction of the biometric access logon system. That management system is assisting, I suppose, all the staff cannot log on to the NPR, process at a sensitive stage functions without them being having logged on biometrically, and therefore then we can always have an audit trail on who registered such birth and what documents were provided or to submit and support that particular process. So there are measures in place around dealing with the border, but we also now, even as recently as 2 weeks ago, we met with SASA, because with SASA's process of re-registration, they have also provided us with details of certain identities that they believe are not appropriate. So we're working very closely with them to make sure, because that is the law that people use, other than just gaining South African citizenship, is to get these grants. And if they are just moving across the border, it's quite easy. So we are working with SASA also to close that loophole and block those ID numbers where there is a need. Then on the issue about the rural areas, I think the Director General did respond to the matter. But just to indicate, Honorable Chair, that the mobile offices were divided looking at the size and the nature of the provinces. For example, the Limpopo was given 16 mobile offices. And there has been a challenge, of course, but the department was able to have a breakthrough with the involvement of SETA and Telkom, as well as in GreenTech, who are currently assisting us to upgrade our satellite dishes. And as the DG has indicated, the timelines, we've got a very clear project plan that by end of April we should be able to have these mobiles. But Limpopo, not just Northern Cape, also received additional 4x4s, which also are earmarked to assist us in terms of outreach programs to ensure that we have that. On the expansion of hospitals, as we had indicated, and currently we are at 334 hospitals connected, and the target of 795 over the next 3 years or so is meant to assist us to be able to achieve the footprint even in the rural hospitals. In fact, if you look at the breakdown between urban and rural hospitals that have been connected, we'll see that the difference is not really that much. Currently, out of the 334, 154 are rural hospitals. So the efforts are being made by the department not to neglect that. Coming to the issue of staffing, our approach as a department was that we have a matrix of hospitals graded according to the number of births that occur per month in each hospital. So we have priority one hospitals, priority two, priority three. That then assists us to determine which hospitals can have a full-time staff and which hospital can have a roving member who can service a cluster of hospitals. And it is based on that that we are allocating personnel according to that, rather than for every hospital, irrespective of the numbers of beds, to have a dedicated capacity full-time. Then finally, in achieving this target, as I was indicated, that the new regulations, which we're hoping to have implemented sooner than later, we are just hoping that they will assist us in terms of the stringent measures that will be put in place with these new regulations. Once that happens, and which I think is quite urgent to happen, when you implement this, it will change the culture, because there will be more, if you look at the minister's forward, even on the plan, it is talking about the agents of making sure that with the new regulations, the recent measures being put in place, more and more people will be registered within 30 days, because currently the minister's reference there is talking about 45% still outside of that. So we are hoping that with the regulations that we had planned to have them by April, but now we seem to have more time taken, we will be able to really turn around the culture issue and make sure that births are restored within 30 days rather than what is happening currently of this split, and we'll have a higher universal coverage. Thank you very much.
Thank you, thank you. DM and DJ, I want to thank you for coming here and making the presentation, responding to questions. I want to thank you. And the officials also of the department who are here, I want to thank you for all the inputs that have been made. I'm looking forward to the modernization project, and I really support that, because I remember one time, I think it was in 2004, the then DG was Mr. Lambinon, if you remember, and we wanted to know how long are the systems going to, when are they going to be working in the department, and he said, you know, it's going to take about 10 years. You, Chauke is so red. What do you mean 10 years when things are happening now? He said, no, you need, you know, he was speaking that IT language, and we didn't understand what he was saying. But at least today we see the light that the IT thing is coming together now, and the department is working towards paperless. But please take us along, because we were born long before that system came to be. We get lost here and there, and we hope you will have patience with people like us. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and thank you, DG, and also the department. I'm sure you may leave if you so wish, because we still have minutes to adopt. DM, do you want to say something?
Just to thank all of you, Chair, yourself, and all of the honourable members, some of whom have stayed to the end. may I just say that without your assistance and your support and your nudging, we would not be able to perform our work adequately. As far as the modernization is concerned, I think we are as keen as yourself, if not more, to see this thing realized. We are under no illusions, as I have said before in this portfolio committee, that it's a huge, huge endeavor, and that ours is rather to walk small steps and make sure about every step rather than try and take giant leaps. So it may be, Chair, that it will ultimately be 10 years since that prophecy was made, but we will get there. That part we are quite sure. We will certainly take you with us, and we hope that you, in turn, will take us with you.
Thank you, DM.
Can I hear from you, honourable members, whether are we going to adopt our minutes, or we flag them for next week? For next week. And tomorrow we have our visitors at M46. Yeah. 9:30. 9:30 tomorrow, Honourable McIntosh.
Question? Tomorrow we're meeting the Ugandan delegation. On the agenda and the documents that we've already been sent, presumably. Is there going to be a lunch again? I mean, as there was last week. Okay. But Parliament, the plenary is starting at 2 o'clock, not at 3 o'clock, as it normally does on a Wednesday.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm sure we will adjourn for lunch at 12:30 up till 1:30.
Okay.
All right. Then after that, we go to plenary.
Okay. I do have a problem. I've got DGI, a PC as well, but I'll try to ride both horses.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Thank you, Honourable Members. The meeting is adjourned.
much.
All right.
Bye. So I think I have it all, but if not, I'm sure you'll be hearing from me. Thank you. And then
to get copy.
I mean, just quickly before you leave, how would I secure an electronic copy? Would I talk to you, or would I?
Which copy?
Of the presentation for today?
I can email.
Okay.
Yeah.
Either one?
Mm.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good afternoon.